I mean, what's Pro Football Focus doing? Last week they had Brady. This week they got Brady.
We're doing it. We're literally doing it differently from everybody else.
As a matter of fact, moving forward from this point on, I will not make reference to PFF.
Do you not understand that they are that way because you're Joe Flacco?
You just like to discredit things that people deserve credit for.
That you can't possibly be expected to defend that.
Talk about the game, Sam.
So,
who cares about what people think about us?
Yeah, I like football season, all the things that go with it.
Welcome in to the PFF NFL podcast. Steve Pelizzolo back here with Sam Monson. And it's another mock draft Monday, Sam. The people loved last week's mock draft when you and I, you know, kind of worked together. Got into some heated battles, but kind of worked together for every team.
It was going fine right up until you screwed up the Bills pick.
Don't even start. You were just completely wrong there. But anyway, today we can, you know, band together and beat up Mel Kiper's mock draft.
Perfect.
Sound good?
The Godfather.
The Godfather. Mel Kiper.
Of drafting stuff.
Of hair.
Hair.
Of mock drafts. Of the draft world.
Fair play to him. Look at his age, and he's still got the hairdo.
It's beautiful.
I don't have any hair anymore, let alone the hairdo.
You killed the shine a little bit.
That's good. I tried. I used my guy, Paulie, who's a man who's been bald for as long as I've known him. He was like, the trick is talcum powder.
Yeah.
All right. I gave that a shot. It's... I mean, you know, so there's an application problem. I think in order to apply talcum powder, you need like that hairbrush that barbers use, you know, where they put the powder in the brush and then like whoosh, over the head.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's how you're supposed to put it on. If you don't have that.
You could do that, yeah.
I don't have the brush.
Yeah.
So if you don't have the brush,
that's the next step.
There's an application issue that I haven't cleared yet. It's a hurdle I haven't got over.
Jake in the YouTube chat wants me to get back in the charity drive by being edited into the Will Smith slap after my worst draft take.
Being edited into it?
I assume that means get like an actual...
Like Photoshop or somebody run up...
I mean, a Photoshop's easy. I would definitely do that.
I mean, I'll slap you if you need it.
Yeah, maybe I'll take a little Hollywood slap to the face.
No. Like a real one.
Oh. Because that's what Will dropped.
No. Yeah. Like, he walked right up and... whoosh,
just kind of like popped him in the ear.
Yeah, I'll do that. If you need it.
Anyway. What a crazy night that was.
I mean, my favorite part is that, like, they just carried on.
Well, yeah, what else are you going to do?
I don't know. But it feels like, you know, security or somebody should be involved beyond just, like, all right, next.
It is kind of amazing that just anybody could just walk up on stage, apparently.
No, not anybody. That's my point. Like, you have to be basically Will Smith to get away with that. If you were like, if you tried it, if you're somehow in the Oscars as some kind of like,
who's going to stop me?
Pity ticket. You would have been, six people would have jumped on you the way, you know, the way like a pitch invader where the guy with the yellow vest, like six of them jump on board, grab hold of him and winch him off to the side. That would have been you.
No.
You'd have been hogtied before you made it onto the little Finn stage walking up to Chris Rock.
Nobody's stopping me. If I got beef with Chris Rock, it's going down.
Yeah.
Nobody's
going
to stop me. National TV. Doesn't even matter.
Okay.
Anyway. Coming out of that, the best jokes were certainly the ones that suggested that's why Phil got Will, not Phil, not Uncle Phil.
Not Uncle.
Will got sent to Bel Air in the first place.
Yes.
Those were good.
Great jokes.
A lot of other takes, not so good. All right. Let's get into the Mel Kiper mock draft. It's over at ESPN.com. We're going pick by pick. And, you know, I think it's just fun to talk through all these scenarios, right? Because he's going to have a completely different take than we will. And, of course, Mel generally comes from an angle of being an insider, right? Mm. From hearing things. Boots on the ground. His own boots on the ground. And that's where he gets his sources, whereas you and I are trying to more go from what we would do and our evaluation of the rosters and the players.
Yeah, we only have a few sources, and generally we're not allowed to like, say things that they tell us.
Pretty much,
yeah.
Our sources aren't for...
public consumption.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's kind of annoying.
Not for the media part of our
Mel
job.
Mel sources, they're right out there immediately.
But we'll start with the PFF NFL podcast, being sponsored by the Western and Southern Financial Group. While you focus on your roster moves, Western and Southern helps advance your money moves. Buying your first home? Planning to start a family? Wondering how to make your money grow? Well, Western and Southern's playbook of life insurance, investment, and retirement solutions helps you rest assured on game day. Team up to understand needs and address goals with a game plan built just for you. Get started at westernsouthern.com/PFF. Did you tweet this thing out yet? Get the people here?
All right, I did. Beautiful. I didn't retweet it from my own account, but it's the podcast account.
As I mentioned, it's part of ESPN Insider, but whatever they call it now, ESPN Plus.
Plus.
I'm still back in 2013 here.
Yeah.
ESPN Plus, ESPN.com, Mel Kiper's most recent mock draft at number one for the Jacksonville Jaguars. He does have Aiden Hutchinson from Michigan.
Yeah, which is becoming more and more the consensus pick, right? There's not too many mocks recently that don't have Aiden Hutchinson as the number one, despite his little T-Rex arms.
Yeah, and Mel mentions that before the combine, you know, he was thinking about, you know, is this offensive tackle? Is this edge? And Mel was also influenced by the free agency moves, not just, you know, bringing back Cam Robinson and, you know, basically saying, hey, this is they still have a big need at edge and thinks Hutchinson's going to be the guy.
Yeah, I think he's probably right. I mean, it makes the most sense at this point. You could go offensive tackle. I don't think that would be a bad pick. But they appear to be dialing in on Aiden Hutchinson.
All right, we've spoken a lot about Hutchinson. Number two with the Detroit Lions. Mel's also going with Kyle Hamilton. Mel's also got this conundrum.
Good work, Mel.
Yeah. You know, look, he passed on Kayvon Thibodeau here. He's, yeah, as he mentions, you know, you do have two starting tackles in Taylor Decker and Penei Sewell, so you're not really going to go offensive tackle. This does kind of feel like the default. There is a need at safety still for the Lions. But it's not about filling needs at number two overall. It's about how special can Kyle Hamilton be, even though he's a safety. Traditionally, you don't want to take safeties in the top five.
Yeah, and yet the funny thing is, if you read Mel's justification, he's going for Hamilton because he wants, a pun intended, presumably, safety. He wants a safer pick. So he's actually not going with Thibodeau, you know, a guy with insane upside and the next best pass rusher and blah, blah, blah. He's going for a safe pick. In a safety with crazy upside. Like, we have been using the logic of you take Kyle Hamilton because the potential ceiling that he can hit is special and potentially game-changing and potentially defense-changing, not because it's safe, but that's what he's going for.
I think he's interpreting safe as player grade in general, right? Which is, this guy's graded higher. This guy is one of the best safety prospects of recent years, and I think he's just going by pure grade. I like to define safe more by what you can predict positionally.
Safe as in, like, draft grade, the 7.0.
Right. Safe as in draft grade. And so, like, for instance, I'm not going to put words in Mel's mouth, but he would probably use it the same thing with, say, Saquon Barkley and call him safe because he has a high draft grade. Same thing with Kyle Hamilton. I think that's how he's using safe. I think that's how the NFL has generally used the word safe.
Maybe
in
he
the
just
past.
Wanted the pun.
Or one of the ways. Yeah, I mean, I think he's got the same conundrum we have. Like, I don't really want to take a safety as good as Kyle Hamilton is, but it's probably the best fit at two for the Lions. All right, so that was what our mock had last week. So we're two for two along with Mel. Then things change up just a little bit. Houston Texans, they go Ikem Ekwonu. He's the first tackle off the board from NC State. So the Texans get a tackle. Now, I did misspeak last week. Some people called me out on it. I misspoke about Laramie Tunsil, but, you know, because they did re-up Laramie Tunsil. So he might not be the trade candidate that I had suggested. But right tackle is still a question mark for the Houston Texans. It's not like they've got dudes locked in at right tackle. So in this case, Ekwonu would be the right tackle. Last week, we gave Evan Neal to the Texans. He would be the right tackle in that scenario. That's fine. But the Texans, with the first of their two draft picks, first rounders, they're going to go Ekwonu. Surprised to see him as the first tackle off the board here in Mel's mock.
Has there been a big group of people talking about Ekwonu as a guard, or have I just seen that randomly once?
I think our guys have. I think it's in part because he is just, I mean, his run blocking highlight reel is awesome, right? And so he is an absolute mauler in the run game, never really had an elite pass rush grade, a pass blocking grade. So I think that's part of it, right? It's his skill set. People think, okay, he would be kind of like that Zach Martin type, right? He would be a good tackle, but if you kicked him into guard, does he have a chance to be that elite guard? So I'm not sure if there are people beyond PFF because I try to, I don't know about you, I try not to hear too much outside influence as much as possible. It's tough when you're on Twitter and you just get takes thrown at you.
I'm not trying to avoid it. I'm just curious. I don't know if I've seen it just, you know, one or two times, or if there's actually like a groundswell that the way, you know, there is. Every now and again, there's a guy, most years, there's a tackle, usually one with short arms. It's like, oh, the guy's a guard now.
Yeah. It's usually short arms or just, again, in this case, I think it's...
And it's generally not a guy thought to be, you know, one of the very best prospects in the draft, right? It's usually a sort of mid-first rounder or a low first rounder. It's like, maybe that guy's actually a guard. But it would be interesting. Like, so with Ekwonu, we've gone from, yeah, he's right there with Evan Neal and with Charles Cross to some people have him number one on the board. Some people had him number one overall. He could go number one overall, to other people being like, well, he'd be a reasonable tackle, but he'd be an amazing guard. And that changes like where you, I mean, not necessarily, but it changes potentially where you can draft him, because usually you don't take guards that high. That being said, the last one that got taken that high, Quentin Nelson, has been the most valuable offensive lineman in the game. Yeah. Not just guard, offensive lineman. So if you're, you know, revising history, be like, well, why can't you take Quentin Nelson number one overall or number three overall?
If you're using PFF WAR, the high-end guards are as valuable as tackles. You know, Trent Williams kind of bucked that trend this year because his grade was just insane. You also have Brandon Scherff a few years back, went number six overall too, I believe it was.
Five, I think.
Was he five? So, I mean, similar, right? I mean, so there are a lot of people that don't care about drafting guards that high. I do believe in this case, Texans would play him at right tackle. Opposite Laramie Tunsil.
Five overall. Just checked.
Five, thanks.
Yeah.
Good memory, Sam.
I thought it was, but then I was like, am I being an idiot? I mean, I don't want to
put the wrong information. You nailed it. You're doing great. Yeah. I haven't had enough coffee this morning. Brain's just not functioning perfectly.
But you had like some like weird mason jar of...
Overnight oats, Sam. Overnight oats.
Look terrible.
The diet is just going real smooth right now.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Broke it off Saturday night just for a...
Cheat day. Like, The Rock has cheat meals. If it works for The Rock, it's got to work for you, right?
I was trying to negotiate a cheat day with Kelly. Yeah. She said, no, we're just doing this for a month. But our friends took us out to dinner. We had a birthday dinner on Saturday night, so we got to break it one time. Turning 40 this week.
Oh, God.
Yeah. This week.
You're old.
That's why we're going on the diet. She's like, we're turning 40. Let's go. Stop eating like crap.
Okay.
So here we are. Overnight oats.
Good luck with that.
Prior to the podcast.
God, it didn't look good. I'm not going to lie. Austin claimed it did, but I think...
Oh, Austin was excited.
I think you're both crazy.
Yeah, it's very Austin-y
type of
meal. All right, New York Jets at four. This one surprised me. Drake London.
Yeah.
They're going receiver at four. I think when... So the Jets have 4-10 overall. And I think most people have resigned to like, hey, the Jets are going to go Kayvon Thibodeau if he's there. They want a pass rusher. They'll get the receiver later, or they'll get a corner later, because both are needs. I mean, they're all needs, right? The fact that the Jets still could use a true number one receiver. They could still use a corner. They could certainly use more pass rush. But I think most people were thinking trenches early. I mean, a lot of people were trying to give them a tackle. I do think they've come around to their senses saying, okay, they feel pretty good about George Fant and Mekhi Becton over there on the offensive line. So Drake London here at four. First receiver off the board, and also – well ahead of where we've been maybe mocking Drake London.
Yeah, London is a funny prospect. Not funny, haha, you know, funny, curious. And he's a guy that I think you need to, when he sort of, when I look back at my notes of what I wrote down when I looked at Drake London's tape, and there's a lot of stuff, it's a little bit like Ja'Marr Chase in terms of the negatives were, when you look at Ja'Marr Chase's tape, the negatives were kind of like, why is this working? Like, it doesn't look amazing, but it works every time, you know? Like, he doesn't look like a guy who, you know, the way Jerry Jeudy, right? The route running and the speed and stuff, it was so obvious. And it's, you can clearly see why he's breaking open by like 3 yards every time he runs a route. With Ja'Marr Chase, it was harder to work out why it was functioning every single time. And yet, as long as it does, who gives a crap? But the problem with that is, there's a fine line between that and, well, this will work against guys that aren't very good in college, but it's not going to work against NFL cornerbacks that are bigger, stronger, faster, and better. So when you look at Drake London, he's got this kind of weird, slow, lazy, like, languid style of moving around that doesn't look like it should work, but does. Like, nothing looks sudden, nothing looks immediate, but it works. He gets open, he runs routes, it's not just a contested catch guy, though he's really good at that. And then he does a bunch of other small stuff that works really well as well. So one of the reasons he's such a good contested catch guy is that he doesn't just let the ball hit his hands and then, like, job done, right? The second he touches the ball, he's really good at moving it somewhere and shifting his body between him and the guy trying to break it up.
Yeah.
So that's important.
Who does that? Who did that in recent memory really well? I'm picturing it. I can't think of who that is exactly. But the thing with London, Tyler put up the PFF draft guide, which does a nice little breakdown. And this year we added position traits. So Mike Renner put in position traits, which is not historically a PFF thing. You know, it's more of a scouting thing. We put a 1 to 10 scale there, and you see his speed as a 3.
Right.
Which is, you know, to your point, it's like, all right, number 4 overall, well, you have to be really good. This is your slider thing. You have to be really good at everything else. Renner's given him a 10 for ball skills, for physicality, and a 9 for route running. That's where I do think sometimes when you're evaluating dudes who are 6'4 plus, you just assume they're not getting open. I mean, that's kind of like the Mike Evans factor, right? When you watch Mike Evans run routes and get open, you know, a lot of times it's like, there's a subtle push off. He's not winning. He's not getting open the same way Devontae Adams gets open or Keenan Allen gets open, but he generally gets open. And I do think there are a lot of similarities to Drake London and Mike Evans, Evans is faster. There's not from an overall playing style necessarily, but the fact that they're big and they are more than just contested catch guys. And I think even when Evans came out, his highlight reel at Texas A&M was Johnny Football throwing jump balls left and right.
Sure.
So a lot of people probably thought Mike Evans fast and he just goes up and catches it, but he's actually a really good route runner, just differently from some of the best in the league.
Yeah. So the only thing that scares me about that is that I thought a lot of that was true with J.J. Arcega-Whiteside as well. Like, I thought he actually got open more than he was given credit for, and his highlight reel was just like post up in the end zone, right?
Yeah.
Run out there, box out a guy, just catch the ball in the end zone. But when you actually looked at his tape, there was a lot of getting open. Now, I think London's better at that than Arcega-Whiteside was. But still, the fact that that bombs so badly is a little bit scary. But if you look at this and you sort of say, well, this is all a plus, right? Because even though he looks kind of slow and languid and not sudden, who cares? It's working. It's getting open. So it doesn't matter. If you look at that and then you add in the contested catch stuff and the fact that not even just contested catch is wrong way of looking at it. He reacts really well to the ball in the air, regardless of where it is.
Yeah.
Which leads to him winning some contested catches, but it also means like he just reacts well to the ball in the air. Like, there's a lot of times where he's running his route, back shoulders or whatever, and he's just really good at positioning himself to a football that's already in the air in a way that cornerbacks can't necessarily react to. Then you add in the fact that he's massive. So I guess my point being, if you're positive about all those things, I can see how you get him to 4. You know, in a world where Ja'Marr Chase goes 5 overall. But I can also see why that would be an outlier opinion.
Yeah. I mean, look, if the key is, what are the Jets going to come away with in their 2 picks? And a lot of people have given them Drake London just at the other spot. And I don't think it's crazy. Look, he was a high-volume receiver at USC. Only averaged about 12 yards per catch last year as a high-volume guy. But I do think he has big play potential. And I always use the phrase possession plus type, the guy whose production looks like a Michael Thomas or a Chris Carter. I mean, whatever. Maybe those are the highest end of comp. I'm just trying to describe what that guy is. Not necessarily an explosive downfield threat, but a guy that you're just going to go to on third down. I think Drake London can be that guy here for the Jets. Obviously, Mel's believe in that as well. So Drake London goes at 4. So we'll circle back to the Jets at 10. Puts the Giants up at 5. They're going to go offensive tackle. That's no surprise. Most mock drafts have them taking at least one tackle with picks 5 and 7. And they're going to go Evan Neal from Alabama. This is one where we talked about last week on one of our shows. Is this a place where the Giants should look to next year? With their completely overhauled regime, QB class should probably be better next year. You probably need a quarterback next year. The whole overall draft class might be better next year. Have to wonder if the Giants at 5 or 7 might be looking to trade down for next year's picks.
Yeah, I would. I mean, if you're the Giants and you can flip one of those, the problem with, yeah, you'd have to flip it for quite a lot because obviously, generally, the next year's picks come with a discount, right? Because you don't know exactly where they're going to be, et cetera, et cetera. So if you're the Giants and you can flip 5 or 7 for next year first and some other stuff, a second this year maybe, for example, that I think would be worth doing for the Giants. Particularly like if you are looking offensive line with one of these first picks and you can trade out of 5, presumably you're trading out of 5 for, you know, a player somebody's looking to try and grab. Maybe it's Thibodeau, stop that slide. Maybe it is the first quarterback off the board to get in front of Carolina. If that's the case, you're basically certain of the fact that one of those 3 offensive tackles at the top is still going to be there at 7, at which point, win-win.
Yeah, I think this is great. I mean, we'll circle back to the Giants at 7 as well, but Neal probably slots in at right tackle opposite Andrew Thomas, and the Giants they're on their way, right? You had mentioned, we discussed the PFF on the PFF NFL Daily today, biggest remaining needs across the NFL, not every single need, but just the biggest ones that still need to be addressed. Giants have a tackle problem and probably could use another player on the interior as well. So Evan Neal, the freak athlete, who's also productive from Alabama. If PFF was grading this mock draft for the Giants, I think we'd like their picks at 5 and 7. Here's where it gets, I think, fascinating.
You could find out by plugging them into the mock draft simulator.
Oh, yeah, we could do that.
Get an actual grade.
Why don't you do that along the way here? See what the mock draft does. No, it's fine. No, don't do it. Don't get distracted. Trayvon Walker is the pick for the Carolina Panthers.
Wow.
At 6. And Walker's starting to get a ton of hype. And a lot of hype that Trayvon Walker, the edge from Georgia, is going to go ahead of Kayvon Thibodeau. And this is kind of rare, Sam, especially on the defensive line. When you have a guy like Kayvon Thibodeau, usually the guys that were projected to go number one overall a year in advance don't drop that far. And usually, again, those are the Boses and Miles Garretts of the world or Chase Youngs of the world. But Thibodeau's falling, in at least in public perception here. We already know Aiden Hutchinson's favored to go number one at the same position. And now we're talking Trayvon Walker potentially leapfrogging Thibodeau in the draft as well.
The last time we talked about Thibodeau, somebody called us out for leading off the podcast by promoting the Hutchinson podcast and then complaining that Thibodeau has his own cryptocurrency. So we're in on one guy for having off-field, you know, interests and out on the other guy. Look, I would say that I think there's a perception difference between doing your own, telling your story as a football player and as a prospect and spooling up your own Ponzi scheme with a cryptocurrency.
Whoa. Now, Ponzi, that's an accusation.
Okay, maybe that's too far. But, your own...
Now, if you said pyramid,
sure,
maybe
okay,
that's
pyramid,
more realistic.
Your own pyramid scheme cryptocurrency that, I'm just saying, I think there's a difference between the two. And I'm not saying that's the reason you're on Thibodeau. I'm just saying, my point was simply a joke that, Dan Campbell's not a crypto guy. That's my point.
Dan Campbell's not a crypto guy.
You roll in there, right, and you're like, here, I'm... Dan, you want to buy 100, whatever I'm calling these things. I don't even know what they're called, his Thibodeau coins, right? You want to buy 100 of those? They're going to go to the moon as soon as you draft me, Dan. Dan is going to drop kick that guy out of the building so fast.
You think, forget it.
That was my point. So I'm not buying into this whole world
didn't
of like.
Didn't you buy a few Portnoy's a couple months back?
No, I didn't do that.
Okay.
No, wouldn't. Because it was, I'm still like. Down hard from the Doge we got that never came back.
It bounced back this weekend.
Did it?
Well, it bounced back to like one of the previous dips.
Yeah. I'm going to need it to bounce all the way back.
Yeah, it's going to need to. The people that were really, really trying to get that thing to a dollar, they're going to need to
I need those
step
people
up.
To help me out.
They're going to need to step up.
So I'm not buying into this whole narrative of like Thibodeau doesn't love football. He's, not really in this thing. He's going to bust because he does, he's got outside. Like, I'm not buying into that. I'm just saying that, I was generally joking, to be honest. But I think there is a difference between, a guy telling his football story and a guy setting up his own cryptocurrency. Anyway, Trayvon Walker.
So Walker's going to be one of the most fascinating picks in the draft, I think. First off, the Panthers pick overall.
Not quarterback.
Right. So it's not a quarterback. And a lot of people said, look, they're not picking until round four after this. You've almost forced your hand to go quarterback.
I don't see how they – if they haven't got a quarterback and the draft starts, I don't see how you can't draft one at six.
Do they – now, I imagine that their draft grades on the quarterbacks are similar to the rest of the league.
Yeah. That it doesn't matter. Everybody in that building is getting fired if you don't draft a quarterback.
But given
like, – inevitably.
Do you try to trade down?
For what?
Because
then you're going to trade down to like 15 and the quarter, like the best, at least at six. The only virtue of drafting a quarterback at six is that at least you have first choice. You might not like any of them, right? But at least pick your favorite gamble. You're at 15, it might be your third favorite gamble. And the guy, like in a bad draft class for quarterbacks, you might be stuck with the third best.
But that's the point in this draft class, that maybe the difference is marginal.
But for the
and because you don't pick again until 137,
yes.
You are the Carolina Panthers in a rebuild mode.
But remember that they're not even kind of in. Like, the point is, GM head coach, right? For them, the only thing that matters is the quarterback. Because if you don't have one of those by the end of the season, you are being fired. So if they trade down, right? Okay, you snag a quarterback at 15. He's now your third favorite option in a bad class, and you've got two more picks in the mid rounds. They do nothing for you if you didn't get a quarterback. Like, literally nothing.
Yeah.
You need the quarterback, which means you need to take the best shot you have at a quarterback, which unfortunately for you now is number six overall.
Let's see, what did Mel have to say here? Panthers have struck out in the quarterback trade market so far, although Baker and Jimmy Garoppolo are still available. They're still trying to upgrade. Could they take Malik Willis or Kenny Pickett here? It's possible. Matt Rule's on the hot seat. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, look, so this could be his attempt at a big splash for 22-22. That's what they have to do. They have to draft.
But Mel basically suggests, if he wants to win now, trade for a veteran. So he's basically saying, go to that Baker Mayfield, Jimmy Garoppolo market and go get this edge rusher.
But that's the problem. Like, look at those. If the team that they are right now, do you think that either Baker Mayfield or Jimmy Garoppolo is saving their jobs?
It probably gives them a better chance to win now. I mean, if you're trying to save your job, what coaches have done in the past is you draft the quarterback, right?
Uh-huh.
But this rarely works, right?
But none of this is going to work. That's the thing, right? You're in this crappy situation where you have no quarterback.
No, you have a better if you think you're going to the Panthers have to show improvement here. So what is that? 8-9 wins? If they show eight, if they have 8 or 9 wins,
you think either Baker Mayfield or Jimmy G is capable of getting that team to 8 or 9 wins?
Yeah, definitely. In the NFC South,
have you seen that? Have you seen their offensive line?
Yeah, it's better. It's a little bit better. What'd they win? 6 games last year? They stumbled into 6 games with horrible quarterback play. Whatever they won, I mean, they're picking 6th overall. They didn't win it, but they started 3-0. Yeah, if you have Baker or Jimmy G, you could stumble into 8 or 9 wins. In the NFC South. Yeah.
Okay.
You could. So, I mean, if you're just thinking job saving, a lot of people think you draft the quarterback, they'll give you another year.
Yeah.
Right? That never happens.
No.
The last two Bears first round quarterbacks.
They won 5 games last year, 3 of which happened in weeks 1 through 3.
So they're due. They haven't won more than 2 games since week 4. Yeah. They're due. I don't know. Maybe the veterans. Let's talk Trayvon Walker, the actual pick here. So he leapfrogs Kayvon Thibodeau. Again, this dude had one of the most amazing combines of all time. He's 6'5", 272. Just to read off some of his measurables. 97th percentile arm length. That matters at the position. 97th percentile 40-yard dash. Overall athleticism matters at that position. Vertical jump, 75th percentile. So his jumps were 70s and 80th percentile. The shuttle, 4.32, is 70th percentile. And then the three cone, anytime you can run a sub-7 three cone as an edge defender, that's how you turn the corner, right? 93rd percentile. This is built-in-a-lab type edge defender.
Also now owner of my favorite ever positive trait from our friend Seth Payne. The former Houston Texans defensive lineman.
Does Houston radio. Yeah.
Big defensive tackle. In the positives column for Walker. Quote-unquote, admirable bloodlust.
admirable bloodlust.
That is a phenomenal descriptor of a player.
That's him describing how he plays the game?
Yes.
It's not like a Dracula comp.
No. That's you.
I got worse than that last show. Worse than the Dracula one. Grandpa Munster.
Yeah, admirable bloodlust. That's now one of my favorite ever comments about a player.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good descriptor. So
all of that is good. The only question mark is, so why didn't it translate to more pressure and more impact on the quarterback?
So I want to describe from a production standpoint. I've been doing some work here on historic draft classes and all that stuff. And what we've mentioned here quite a bit, our defensive line grades overall, defensive line production from a PFF standpoint, translates very well to the NFL.
Can I pause you for a moment?
Sure.
We've got some real breaking news.
Awesome.
On Hard Knocks this year, it is the Fighting Dan Campbells.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Detroit Lions are going to be on Hard Knocks.
Oh, this is
great. Now I want them to draft Thibodeau, and I want to see the cryptocurrency.
We should drive up. We should just do, it's only 4 hours away.
Yeah.
We should drive up to some Lions training camp this year.
Can you imagine that conversation? Like, we could get the whole conversation on camera.
We've generally not responded to Hard Knocks a whole lot. This could give us some content opportunities.
Well, for the first time in a while, there's potential, you know?
There is.
Now, there was potential when it was Antonio Brown plus the Raiders, and somehow they managed to, avoid the entire thing. So, who knows, right? The editing at HBO might not be conducive to what we're looking for.
True.
But
might not.
There's potential there. As long as there's cameras and Dan Campbell. That's a recipe for some magic immediately.
With a nice ascending Detroit Lions roster. Gotta love it. We good to go back to Trayvon Walker now?
Yeah.
All right. So overall PFF grade last year, 71.4. That is not great.
Not even great.
Average for college.
Yeah.
Right? That includes the playoffs and the championship games and all that stuff. I've seen even people that use sack totals. I don't know. I think Mel said he had 6 last year or whatever. There are people that use sack totals. They're like, oh, he kind of underwhelms. But again, we do it snap by snap. This is 685 snaps last year. He had a 71 grade. Previous year, 318 snaps, a 70 overall grade. So the production for Trayvon Walker is just not there at a position that really translates to the next level. So I've been doing a lot of work on historically, since we have data back to 2014, you know, what do first round prospects look like? What do players who have gone on to have elite careers look like, and where do current players stack up? Trayvon Walker is well behind in pretty much everything that is most stable to translate to the next level. Our wins above average metric at the college level translates really well. Our pass rush grade, pass rush win percentage translates really well at the next level. And Trayvon Walker is well below recent players who have just been drafted in the first round, and even further below recent players who have become high-end or elite players. Now, all that said, none of this is perfect, right? So the guys who have bucked that trend over the last few years, Danelle Hunter, remember he had a very unproductive pass rush final season at LSU. He was an excellent run defender, though.
I mean, he's the classic example of when you point to all this stuff and you're like, you need production, you need the elite, that's the one guy that's the opposite. The guy that anybody arguing against it holds up as evidence.
The other and the other thing about Hunter, and this is why him and Trayvon Walker are probably the best comps, excellent run defenders. And we do take Eric Eager's done some pretty cool stuff with combine, with measurables, and created these combine scores and kind of mapped it to facets of play, pass rush, run defense, or whatever. One of the things that does translate well is the combine score, and of course Walker's is excellent. So you would need it, and look, we haven't gone back and changed our process because Danelle Hunter bucked the trend. He is just an outlier in this for us. The other somewhat outlier is Eric Armstead, who played more in the interior at Oregon, has played on the edge in the NFL level, and his production has been excellent at the NFL level. So Eric Armstead and Danelle Hunter have become better NFL players than college players. That's pretty much it. There are very few players that have gone on to become high-end or elite that have rushed the passer as ineffectively as Trayvon Walker. So picking him in the top 10 or even in the first round, I think, is risky. Even Rashawn Gary, who we brought this, that's the other comp, right? Little different stylistically, but Rashawn Gary, great combine, great athlete, didn't have the on-field production. on one hand, it did take him till year three of his 5-year contract, right? It took him to year three, but he did break out. So if you're drafting Trayvon Walker, I do think Gary's more of an outlier, Danelle Hunter's more of an outlier, and that's what you're banking on. And that's what's going to make him one of the more fascinating prospects. Renner still likes him, top 15 or so in this draft, but he'd have to buck some trends. And I think we'll talk, you know, a little bit more about Walker as we get closer to the draft, but I think that's one of the early concerns with him from a production standpoint. But he goes at 6.
And there are some solid comps to Danelle Hunter in terms of, look, if you're going to be that freaky outlier, you would better be A, a special athlete, B, a good run defender, and C, have no obvious reason why you can't become a better pass rusher, right? Like, those are the, if you're at least, if that's going to be missing from your game at this point, at the very minimum, there shouldn't be an obvious reason why that's true. If you're looking at Trayvon Walker, you can point A to the, like, you know, okay, the Georgia defense probably hinders the overall production of each one of these guys because they're just so freaky, right? Look at the, not only do they have so many of these incredible NFL prospects, like that defense is genuinely like an NFL defense overall.
Incredible. Yeah.
And it turns out once you get them all to like athletic testing, they're all freaks. It's not even, not only are they just incredible players and first round prospects and blah, 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 but they're also like 95th percentile athletes.
They all are.
So
incredible.
So it has to hinder the individual production of each of them, right? The fact that they're all together at the same time.
I mean, by our standards, it shouldn't, because we're saying, hey, go win one-on-ones. I think when you do look at Georgia schematically, though, their edges aren't really, they're not lining up in like wide nines and just getting up the field. There is a lot of team component to it. You know, you got Jordan, you know, keeping outside contain and various things like that. There might be some schematic explanation for the lack of just pure production for some of those guys, Jordan Davis included. So we'll have a similar discussion, though, with Davis, right? Why haven't you dominated in our grading system, which does do a good job of translating to the next level? It's a fair question. All right. This is where Kayvon Thibodeau comes off the board now. So the Giants at 5 pick Evan Neal. Then they go Kayvon Thibodeau at 7. This is what I'm saying, man. If the Giants come away with Evan Neal and Kayvon Thibodeau, guys that we've routinely mocked in the top 2 or 3.
Yeah, jackpot.
I think the Giants are. I mean, and this is a legit possibility.
Sure.
And I love when the new regime, you know, starts in the trenches. You get a tackle and you get an edge defender. Two massive needs here for the Giants, but also, more importantly, value players.
Yeah, I mean, I've said for a while, I think there are a lot of scenarios where the Giants, quote-unquote, win this draft, where a couple of really, really good players at positions of need end up falling exactly where they want them to at 5 and 7, including Thibodeau. Like, the Giants, to me, make a lot of sense to be the team that stops a potential slide from Thibodeau, who, remember, like, you don't have to go back very far for him to be seen. Like, he was the guy people thought was going to go number one overall in this quarterback-less draft class. It was Thibodeau, not Hutchinson, who was seen as the number one overall pick. And then since that point, like, Thibodeau hasn't done anything wrong to see his stock slide. You can, okay, he kind of bailed on the combine, you know, midway through it because he was going to go do, you know, half the workouts, whatever, at his pro day. I don't see that as a problem. I was joking largely about the cryptocurrency stuff. I don't think this whole off-field thing is a reason for him to be sliding. Off-field attitude, commitment, whatever you want to describe it, I think that's all kind of invented. And his on-field play, I agree that it's slightly below Hutchinson's, but I don't think it's far to the point where you're like, he was the number one overall pick, now he's sliding somewhere to the, you know, middle of the top 10. So if he ends up falling as far as number 7 to the Giants, that's amazing for them.
Yeah, I'd like to remind people, there was a point in Myles Garrett's pre-draft process that people said, he likes to play instruments. As a negative. Likes to play instruments. Hasn't affected him at all.
No, it hasn't. Well, I mean, unless you've determined that the rage that's... What kind of music was he playing? Was he into, like...
Probably Rage Against the Machine.
Death metal? He was into death metal, you know, that's the kind of thing that'll make you swing a helmet at Mason Rudolph.
Maybe that's...
But if he was like a viola player or whatever, that's probably not it.
No, I think it's more of like, given the tone and context of it, I think it was more on like the classical music side, which doesn't...
Okay.
And look, you know, you and I talked to Miles over at training camp, right?
That was... Briefly.
No, we talked to him during practice.
Sure.
During a scuffle.
Yes.
And he's like, I ain't got time
for that. Which he wanted no part of.
He said, I do not want to go to the scuffle.
To be fair.
And within a year, you know, he's smacking dudes with a helmet.
Yeah. To be fair, he would have had to run quite a way to get involved in that.
So he'd probably just tie. So he wasn't. He's not anti-scuffle.
Right.
He's anti-run like, to the scuffle.
If you want to bring the scuffle to me, I'll jump right in there.
Yeah.
But I'm not running from here to over there to sort out whatever crap this is.
Unlike Will. Will brings the fight to his enemies.
Yes.
Right? He's willing to walk on stage.
He's prepared to walk right across that stage and slap somebody upside the head.
Myles Garrett, scouting report, would never go up on stage.
Yeah.
If the stage came to him, though.
Will not go to the fight. Waits for the fight to come to him.
And Miles wouldn't open-handed either.
Closed fist kind of guy?
Closed helmet kind of guy.
True. Yeah. Well, the fist was closed around the face mask.
True. Yeah, closed fist guy for sure. Anyway.
This is in-depth scouting report.
This is what it's all about. We're working through Mel Kiper's mock draft, having a great time, because it's all about, you know, talking about these first-round options, where teams can go. It's also all about Manscaped, who've launched their ultra-premium collection. Believe it or not, it's for your not-so-private parts. We're talking about a leveled-up hygiene routine with your favorite manly scent. This all-in-one skin and hair care kit for the everyday man covers you top to bottom, head to toe. Manscaped is trusted below the waist. Now trust them with the rest. Join the 4 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped by going to manscaped.com for 20% off plus free shipping with the code PFF. Of course, they give us the five things you need to do in order. Hop in the shower, scrub-a-dub-dub that body with the Manscaped body wash, lather your hair up with the 2-in-1 shampoo and conditioner to keep your noggin toggin, Sam. Dry off and spray on that hydrating body moisturizer to reinvigorate dry skin. Then put on the Manscaped deodorant for obvious reasons. And then number five, pop that Manscaped lip balm on. No one's out here kissing those chapped up lips. Getting dressed after that's optional, especially if you work from home. Wear one great scent all day long. You get 20% off plus free shipping with the code PFF over at manscaped.com. It's 20% off plus free shipping with the code PFF. It's manscaped.com. The power of attraction is now in a bottle. Thanks to Manscaped.
I wonder whether they have the bald-headed powder applicating brush.
Oh, do they have? Yeah, I do wonder if they have anything for you.
For the bald head? Yeah.
I think that's...
What's the thing? Like, remember, like the old, you know, 1940s cartoons or whatever. What a tonic? Wasn't that what they, you know, Bugs was always putting the tonic on? What's that dude's the bald headed
Elmer?
Yeah.
Elmer Fudd.
Elmer Fudd hunting wabbits. Like he, you know, the tonic massage into the bald noggin. Is that
I'm
what you
sensing
get?
In,
right, it's just coming.
I'm
right?
sensing an Elmer,
Elmer Fudd,
Fudd
versus
side
Sam,
by side,
side
here.
By side. I'm telling you, I'm getting HR right onto it.
I think that's coming
up.
Here soon. I think HR watches, so I think they're...
They're probably good. In the booth, like, doing this stuff.
Yeah, I think they encourage this. This is team building, Sam.
Oh, yeah?
This is what it is.
Bonding.
Yeah, we're bonding.
Yeah.
All right, so we're on to pick number 8 here. Atlanta Falcons in Mel's mock. So the Falcons at 8 and the Seahawks at 9. Both of these teams need a quarterback. The Falcons signed Marcus Mariota. The Seahawks have Drew Lock. Neither of those guys is the long-term option, presumably. And neither team goes quarterback. I do wonder how much this is. Remember, Mel's an insider here, so he knows. How much does he know? Teams just like nobody's going to take a quarterback here. Nobody's going to take a QB. The Falcons go wide receiver Garrett Wilson from Ohio State here at 8.
I can see Atlanta not going quarterback. I cannot see Carolina getting out of this without taking a quarterback. If they haven't got one at that point, which is still on the table.
Because they don't have a second rounder to circle back. I would love to take a QB in the second round here.
Yeah, but again,
or 32.
It's like, so there's two parts of that. There's one, there's that idea that like if you're going to take that guy, take him in the first round, at least there's some like shred of indicating that you have confidence in him. If you draft, you can't draft one of these guys in the second round, like, all right, let's go. Nobody believes in that guy. Secondly, You can't wait. If you're Carolina, you're sitting there at 6 overall. You need a quarterback. You just have to grab one. You have put yourself in this position. Like, it's not great. It's a bad spot to be in. On the other hand, it's all that you've got left. So swing. Like, you've put yourself in the position. I don't understand baseball enough to come up with a suitable analogy, but like, you have one swing of the bat left. You have to connect and hit this thing out of the park. That's all you have left with you.
Yeah, there's no point in baseball. You have to swing.
Okay.
Because there's no time limit.
Right. Well, this is...
They could just keep walking.
This is not an ideal situation, but this is the scenario that you've put yourself in,
by your complete lack of a quarterback right
Maybe
now.
Maybe the closest thing is, look, Sam's adding to the baseball talk. Barry Bonds would see about 7 strikes a week when he was all sauced up and hit a bunch of home runs. He'd hit 5 of them out because they just keep walking him. But every time he had a strike, he hit it out.
Okay.
Every time. This is your one opportunity, Panthers.
Yeah.
So you don't think the Falcons or Seahawks has to force a QB pick. Obviously, Mel doesn't think they're going to.
Right.
Because the Falcons go wide receiver Garrett Wilson. This is where Mississippi State offensive tackle Charles Cross comes off the board for the Seattle Seahawks. So the Seahawks get their starting left tackle with Dwayne Brown gone in free agency. And the Falcons start rebuilding that receiving core, which has nobody. That's intriguing, though, having Garrett Wilson and having Kyle Pitts.
Yeah.
On the field at the same time for the Falcons.
I like that. I mean, Wilson is the – would it be sensible to say he's the safest wide receiver pick? The guy who – come on, look.
There it is. You set this up.
It was coming.
Did you just frown? Try to replicate that look, really. Oh, gosh, yeah. That's – yeah, I can picture it even without the beard.
Yeah.
We're back, baby.
I mean, I'm just –
next, I'm going to have Andre the Giant up there, and we're
Andre the Giant. If anything, that's like a compliment.
What do you mean?
That's not an insulting side by side. Oh, look here, me next to Andre the Giant.
You think
Grandpa Munster was suitably, you know,
that was
insulting?
Good insult. Yeah, that was a good insult.
Anyway,
you want to call Garrett Wilson the safest here?
Yeah,
I think Olave might be.
Why?
I don't know. They're both really
Wilson's
good.
Better than Olave, therefore he's safer.
Yeah, the safer player is the best player.
Hmm.
That's what I think. No, Wilson's really good. Route runner. I love his – he ran sub 4.4, but he's not like a speed receiver. I love when that happened. That was kind of like what happened with Jamar Chase, right? The best thing that Jamar Chase doesn't do is speed, but, oh, by the way, he ran fast. I mean, you get that with Wilson, who just love his body control, the way he just contorts his body to catch and
to me, he
win at the catch point.
Yeah, to me, he's like a guaranteed – good player. The question is, how good can he get?
Yeah.
Right? Like that, the question with Wilson is, where is the ceiling? But I'm really confident that his floor is very high, at which point I think, you know, number 8 for Atlanta, who need receivers of any description, I think is great.
So then Charles Cross to Seattle. And look, they just have to look, both teams are in a rebuild state here, right? I mean, the Falcons especially are completely rebuilding, eating all that dead money from Matt Ryan. They're better off, just like we talked about with the Giants, looking to the quarterback class next year, I believe.
Sure.
What are you concocting over there?
I'm not concocting anything.
Hmm.
I think that makes sense. They're one of those teams that it does make sense to plot for next year. Mariota gives you that year of just... Now, you can look at the general philosophy over in Atlanta and kind of ask, what are you doing? Which I think is a reasonable question. Like, when the regime came in, you know, Arthur Smith comes in as a new head coach... Like, that was the time to blow the thing up and detonate it and move in a new direction, like the Vikings this year. Like, you get given this rare opportunity to press reset on a team that's kind of got bogged down and is just spinning its wheels. They didn't. And, in fact, not only did they not do that, but they, like, restructured Matt Ryan's contract to make it more of a pain in the ass to get rid of him anytime soon. Ended up a year later doing that anyway, taking the largest dead cap hit in the history of the NFL by a significant margin to start doing it anyway. Now you bring in Mariota, buys you one more year. It's like, well, when? Like, at some point you need to start this thing.
This should be the start.
It should be, but now there's no quarterback. So you're right. The thing to do is to probably say, hey,
build the roster.
Can we put this off for a year? Let's do it next year.
Yeah, build the roster as best you can. Get the quarterback when he's available. For the Seahawks, taking a tackle makes sense here. As of right now, last year's late rounder, Stone Forsythe, big 6'9 dude from Florida. Jake Curran, those are your starting tackles. Stone Forsythe and Jake Curran, your starting tackles in Seattle as of right now. So we should go back to the daily and add tackle as one of the biggest needs around the NFL for Seattle. But they're going to take Charles Cross here at 9. I think that does make a lot of sense. It also means those teams are probably circling back to at least take a look at the quarterbacks in round 2. Seattle in particular, they've got picks 40 and 41. So that makes sense. Jets are coming back here at 10. Man, I love the Jets haul. I would almost take this Jets haul in reverse, but they're going to go Sauce Gardner here at 10.
Right.
And, you know, if they got him at 4,
yeah,
I'm in on Sauce. I think I'm in on him as maybe CB1 over Derek Stingley at this point, the more I look at it. So I'm going Sauce as the best corner in the draft. that I would feel best about.
It is one
and
of those,
the Jets are going to get him at 10.
It is one of those in funny drafts where teams with two picks, if you flip them one over the other, if you flip the order that you draft them, you're like, that's incredible. So in theory, it shouldn't make any difference, right? If you get those two players, who cares?
No, it doesn't.
But it is funny how that works. Like, yeah, if you took Sauce first and then Drake London, it would seem better value, even though like it's literally the same. It's the same two guys. Yeah, I think this is a great duo to select. Addresses two areas of need. And I don't hate the argument that Sauce Gardner is CB1 over Stingley. Personally, I think that Stingley's upside is higher and blah, blah. Yeah. But Gardner answered all the questions. Like, ultimately, you can't really argue with a guy that literally didn't give up a touchdown his entire college career, right? Has insane length. The only possible negative, that too, I guess, the only positive negatives looking at his tape was, one, hasn't really done it against a great level of competition consistently. And not because he didn't do it consistently, because he just simply didn't get that opportunity consistently, right? Whereas Stingley, LSU, you're in a beast of a conference, you're facing good receivers like every single week, not to mention the ones you're facing in practice every single day. Sauce Gardner just didn't get given the same ability to show that. But, and then the second thing being, like, is his long speed great? Doesn't look amazing from tape. Answer that one by going to the combine and running like 4.4 flat. So immediately you're like, okay, the dude does have wheels. The only thing left to answer is, can he continue the pace he's at a higher level of competition? And the only way to find that out is to give him that shot.
The other thing, I think we should maybe do a show later breaking down some of these things. Like, once again, looking historically at players that have hit versus missed and what their similarities are. Corner, we always talk about one of the hardest positions to project. But found a data point. It's kind of in the weeds, but out of 18 players that kind of like hit these thresholds, over 60% of them have been solid or better from a WAR standpoint at the NFL level. Sauce Gardner is the only one who really hits all of these thresholds in the entire draft class using our wins above average metric, coverage grade, and combine score. So again, when you're looking from a position group standpoint, you're trying to figure out what things translate to the NFL level. What does the data tell us? And Ahmad Sauce Gardner is the only guy that, at a difficult position to project, has this particular data point in his favor. So I think that's one of those things perhaps swaying me as I try to, you know, play the odds here as you look at the top of the draft board. So that puts, him and DJ Reed on the field at the same time for the Jets outside after signing Reed in free agency. It gives you Bryce Hall. Love what that does for the Jets secondary.
Yeah.
And, add in a receiver in a corner. Now it's just how much pass rush do they want to add with Carl Lawson and Quinnen Williams over.
I mean, we're 11 picks in. I think both New York teams have done a phenomenal job in this mock.
So at 11, the Washington Commanders, with an interesting one, they go Derek Stingley for a team that on paper, might not necessarily need a corner. And I haven't seen this a whole lot. And I like it. Obviously, I like it because I like taking corners and high-end players, potentially like a Derek Stingley. You already have William Jackson. They spent a lot of money in free agency there. It looks like the back seven, at least on paper, even though they underachieved last year, the back seven should be good for the Commanders. But what do you think of Stingley to Washington here from Mel?
Yeah, I like it. Look, they invested big in William Jackson last offseason in free agency, and it didn't go well last year at all. It didn't go well for the entire defense, top to bottom. But that doesn't mean it's going to go well. Like, I think building in, William Jackson was always a reasonably inconsistent player. Incredible season in 2017. Looked like he was going to be like the next great young cornerback in the NFL. Has never played up to that level since. And even when he's played sort of well for him, it's only within an order of magnitude of that one year. Outside of William Jackson, they've got some players, but nobody you would be confident in is going to be an amazing corner. Like, Benjamin St-Juste is another long corner they had in the draft who shown flashes, but you wouldn't be massively confident in him being the truth at cornerback. Kendall Fuller, like, I would absolutely be on board with them bringing in a guy like Stingley to potentially start and also build in William Jackson contingency. And also, even if none of those things need to happen, like, let's say best/worst case scenario, all of William Jackson bounces back, St-Juste ends up looking really good, and Stingley ends up being the guy that we saw as a freshman. That's not a bad problem. All of a sudden, you got three amazing corners. You can let one of these guys walk, Kendall Fuller, get rid of William Jackson potentially, whatever. It's not a bad problem. It's great.
Yeah, I like it a lot from a strategy standpoint. As Mel reminds people in the mock, too, April 6th is when Derek Stingley is going to work out. That's going to be pro day to just he had the Liz Frank injury last year, show how he's recovered, and that'll really affect his stock. If he runs well, is he back in the top 10 mix? If he doesn't look great, is he lower in the first round? Was it Jeffrey Simmons was kind of that. I mean, he had like a very specific injury that he wasn't going to recover from yet. But those first rounders that are going to miss time or are falling because of injury, where I think you can get value later. So we'll learn a lot about Stingley. But I think him at 11 here, I like it a lot for the Commanders. That brings the Minnesota Vikings up. They go Trent McDuffie, another corner coming out of Washington. You know how much I love McDuffie and his movement skills, the way he floats around the field. He's awesome, but the arm length and all that stuff.
Why did you put on a weird voice where you started to say float around the field?
I don't know.
Okay.
I like watching McDuffie play.
I like that fit as well, specifically defense. Like the McDuffie's weakness problem, whatever, negative column, is it's going to be size, right? He's massively undersized relative to cornerback. Is one of those positions where a lot of teams in the NFL still have like very defined thresholds in terms of size and measurables that you need to hit. If you're not 6 foot, if you don't have arms longer than 32 inches, if you don't, all these things, right? Immediately you're either off the board or massive discount in terms of where we're going to draft you. Now, it's not every team. The defense that the Rams have employed in the last couple of years, and all we can kind of go by is Kevin O'Connell coming in as head coach. The Rams have just shown multiple years now of having high-end cornerback play from guys that don't fit those measurables. Troy Hill, Darius Williams, those guys are both undersized players that wouldn't tick those measurables for a lot of teams. Now, okay, you had Jalen Ramsey on the other side, and that's going to help. But like Kevin O'Connell just watched Darius Williams at smaller size than Trent McDuffie play really well on the outside. So he, if anybody is going to be predisposed to looking at McDuffie and saying, we don't have to move this guy into the slot just because he's short, that's a good place, I think, to give that a shot.
Yeah, there's Darius Williams. I mean, he just made a ton of money, too. This is what's fascinating about the NFL, right? Like when you're looking in the draft, and just to go through McDuffie and his measurables, they are, I mean, much, he's, where did it go? 5'11", 193, 29 and 3/4 inch arms. So he's sub 30. That's 7th percentile. Small hands too.
Yeah, the arms is actually the bigger thing. Like 5'11 and 190 is not, I mean, it's small, but it's not.
But he kind of looks small too. Like he looks slight and kind of plays slight on the field. So I can understand that as an issue.
But that's not like, there are a lot of corners of that size in today's NFL that are fine.
Yeah.
The arm thing is like actually a way bigger, quote unquote, red flag.
But Dante, so just looking at corners with arm length under 30 inches who just played last year, you've got Dante Jackson was, what, a second-round pick with the Panthers, borderline first-rounder. Kareem Jackson, who's now a safety, but Kareem Jackson was drafted as a corner back in the day and played pretty well. Damon Arnett probably shouldn't have gone in the first round, but did go in the first round with sub-30-inch arms. Other guys that have had success, guys like Ross Cockrell have been, I mean, you're not saying, oh, we're going to draft Ross Cockrell in the first round, but he's had a good, solid career. Elijah Molden, who got drafted last year for the Titans, is more of a slot player. Avante Maddox, probably more of a slot player. But those guys have had success with sub-30-inch arms. So I don't know how much that affects McDuffie, but I think to your point, that's a great call-out with O'Connell there.
Yeah, they've had success, but it's not a good list. Like, you're not looking at that list if you're drafting a guy number 12 overall and being like, oh, yeah. He's definitely going to pan out and be a high-end player for us.
No, I get it.
He can survive in the NFL at that size, but this is not – we're not feeling good at the end of this,
Yeah, but to your point, though, you have to make up for it elsewhere, and I think his speed, his change of direction – with Trent McDuffie here, speed, change of direction, and the way he could play zone is outstanding.
I think you can make an argument that he has the best tape of any of these corners, and if you – like if you eliminated the size and speed and stuff, and just watch these guys back to back to back, I think you could easily come away with the opinion that McDuffie is the best player. But then you go, okay, but this guy's 5'11", 190, and has 29-inch arms. This guy is 6'2", you know, whatever, so, like runs a 4'4 flat, has length and size and whatever length arms Sauce Gardner has. Then you're like, yeah, okay, that's enough of a differentiator.
I love how Mel gives a little history lesson here, too, because a lot of times with fans are like, no, not again. And you could see Vikings fans saying, no, not again, because they've drafted four corners in the first round since 2013. Xavier Rhodes, Trey Waynes, Mike Hughes, Jeff Gladney.
Yeah.
And Rhodes probably had the most success out of those guys, and it was only, what, two seasons?
Definitely had the most success.
And Trey Waynes, was okay at times. Mike Hughes, underwhelmed. Jeff Gladney, off-field issues, underwhelmed.
Cleared, though. Well.
Cleared. Well, I mean, he got released because...
Yes, he got released charges. He got indicted for domestic violence.
Either way, for the most part, those picks have not worked out. Now, it doesn't mean, hey, never draft a corner again because the Vikings don't have a great history in the last decade, but it really just means, hey, they still need corners.
Yes.
So I kind of like that fit.
Almost always the problem with those scenarios where a team has burned a bunch of picks on a specific position and it still hasn't worked out, almost always the unfortunate reality of that is it means you need to do it again.
It does.
Now, occasionally I'm on board with a team saying, you know what, we really suck at this. Let's throw a big package to another team and just acquire a veteran. I mean, the Vikings did this themselves with Jared Allen, right? There was a stretch where the Vikings drafted a bunch of first-round edge rushers year after year after year. Erasmus James, Kenechi Udeze, and they couldn't find an edge rusher. None of these guys were panning out, and they went, you know what, screw it. Let's throw two first-round picks to Kansas City and get Jared Allen, pay him a boatload of money, and just be done with it. Like, finally get that guy. And it worked. So... And the Patriots with Bill Belichick, I think, are another example, right? I would be 100% on board with them never drafting a first-round wide receiver again because they seem to suck at it. So pitch first-rounders to other people and grab wide receivers that are already good and just be done with it.
There is something to certain positions, you know, going with the somewhat known commodity. And Belichick has had, like, Belichick's gotten Wes Welker.
And cornerback is one of those positions.
Chris Hogan and Brandon LaFell. Like, they've gotten successful players that way.
Corner is one of those positions where it is volatile. The strike rate is rough. Like, going into a draft, trying to get a guy at 12 overall and needing him to be pretty good, it's not easy. So if there's a way of acquiring, you know, a veteran cornerback with that pick, I'd be all on board for it. But that's the move they should have made, like, a month ago, you know? When J.C. Jackson was obviously on the way out the door in New England, like Minnesota could have maybe packaged number 12, you know, had the Patriots tag and trade J.C. Jackson and ponied up for the big contract. And, okay, it would have been tricky given their cap situation, but that's the move to avoid that doubt, right?
Yeah.
But they didn't do that, so now they're in a position where they got to roll the dice.
So it puts the Texans up at 13. This is the pick from the Deshaun Watson trade. Jordan Davis, here's where... The Georgia defensive tackle comes off the board, 13 overall. And as Mel mentions, look, I completely agree. The Texans can't target needs. I think this is every team. You target the talent, but he's got Jordan Davis. That's the most talented.
We're not doing it again. But, like, no, you can look at needs. And then, no, you can't draft Tyler Linderbaum because he's just out of center.
I mean, at some point, they have to actually fit
at some point, you have to look at needs. That's fine. Yeah.
If you're in the Texans position,
yes,
you absolutely have to draft the best player. So Jordan Davis, the 13, of course, we'll always debate. Is this too high for Jordan Davis? This gives the Texans tackle Ike Ekwonu.
Yep.
And defensive tackle Jordan Davis. They will be better against the run, for sure. More physical.
Yes.
I don't hate it overall. Probably better players to take than Jordan Davis. But here you go with your massive trench starting points in the rebuild here in Houston.
This is, I think, a reasonable degree higher than I would be comfortable taking Jordan Davis. That being said, there's definitely, you know, within Jordan Davis's range of outcomes is absolutely a player that justifies 13 overall. It's just a gamble whether he's going to
The one other issue here is the Texans are playing Lovie Smith's cover two scheme where it's four-man rush. And, you know, when you've watched Jordan Davis too, you were like, man, we keep calling him a nose tackle. But he actually moves and kind of plays like the old school 3-4 defensive ends. guys back in the day that, you know, when you played a base 3-4, would line up more over the tackles, and you still have to win in the run game, but then you kick inside to rush the passer. Jordan Davis still probably fits better in a scheme that has more odd fronts and all that stuff, because you're not necessarily relying on him to win. You're relying on him to eat up blockers and all that, you know, generic stuff that people talk about. In Lovie Smith's scheme, he could play nose and kind of, you know, get upfield and all that stuff, but this also doesn't feel like the best fit, right, for Jordan Davis or Dia?
I think the fit's fine. I think the cover two Lovie Smith thing is a little bit overblown. Like, they run a bunch of stuff. Okay, the fronts, I think, are a little bit less diverse.
It's not so much what they're playing on the back end. It's that they're trying to win.
Yeah, but it's not like this team. Rush. It's not like this team just rolls in there with like an old school Tampa 2 defense every play. I think that Jordan Davis can win in basically any way. The problem is just the frequency with which it happens. Like, there's a bunch of plays where they line him head up over somebody and his first step just destroys the guy and he is in the backfield causing problems. But generally he wasn't asked to do that much. So I think you can, again, there's a range of outcomes where Jordan Davis becomes a much better pass rusher at the NFL level than he was in college. But it's all projection. Like, there's so much of his game that is projection, not least of which, like, we haven't seen him play much, like, at all. His highest workload year was this past season. He played, like, what, 380 snaps or something?
Yeah.
Like, Vita Vea is a guy you'll see him come to a lot as, like, a, hey, monster nose tackle that was drafted high and is a really good player now. Vita Vea has, like, 700, 800 snaps. Like, he's doubling the workload. So, and there's plays in Jordan Davis's tape where he looks knackered after, like, five snaps, you know? It's like, if you're only going to play 380 snaps in a season, they had better be the best 380 snaps of any player ever. You can't have a play where you're just like, where you look wrecked when you're only playing that amount.
Only about 20% of our audience probably understands knackered. If you could just...
Tired. Exhausted.
There you go. Well done. Thanks. I mean, I know it now. Banjaxed. Yeah. I know now because I've, you know, worked with you and Neil and all you other across the pond folks.
Yeah.
I won't use any other.
No, you almost got into trouble there.
No, can't do that. Yeah, so I think that's as big of a concern. You know, will he rush the passer? Can you trust him for 700 or 800 snaps? On the other hand, one of the selling points I thought, remember Danny Shelton years ago from Washington? He came out, he played like 800, 900 snaps his last year at Washington. It's like, all right, this dude's going to be durable, and he ends up coming to the NFL and can only play 300 or 400.
Nick Azaria, obviously a longtime Patriots person.
Yes.
Given the number of hats he's worn there. This is their Vince Wilfork.
In a completely different scheme. But yeah, sure. This you could definitely connect those dots.
Yeah.
The only guy that, because Scott Pioli kind of did the same thing. He drafted Tyson Jackson as his Ty Warren.
That wasn't their Wilfork.
Number three, as their Ty Warren, though.
Wasn't their Ty Warren either.
It was not their Ty Warren. But he went number three overall in a very surprising move. I think it was Dimitroff, of all like the Patriots executive tree, but Dimitroff is the one who probably had the most different strategy.
There's a lot of players, Belichick, I think, that you can connect Jordan Davis to as a comp. And Vince Wilfork, I think, is one of them in terms of an absolutely mammoth guy who was just too freaking strong for anybody to deal with. And there's so many, like, that's realistically Jordan Davis's tape, right? Plays where he is simply way too strong for the dude trying to block him, which you would expect at 350 pounds, right? And as he didn't turn it into a ton of pressure. But Vince Wilfork actually pressured the quarterback quite a lot for a giant man mountain that couldn't really move. You know? Just by literally taking a guy and being, I'm 100 pounds heavier than you and really freaking strong, and I'm going to drive you back into the quarterback.
Yeah.
And okay, it's going to take me a little while to get there, but I will collapse this pocket if you give me long enough. There's no reason Jordan Davis shouldn't be able to do that at the NFL level. And that would make him, you know, Houston's version of Vince Wilfork.
I mean, a lot of schemes just want that from their guy anyway. They just want a little bit of collapse so the quarterback can't step up. So that'd be Jordan Davis there at 13 for the Texans. Baltimore Ravens at 14. I thought I was on an island with this pick when I picked Tyler Linderbaum, the Iowa center for the Ravens. Because, you know, in our community here, I think everybody's like, zone center. Put him with a zone team. Ravens don't run a ton of zone from a run game perspective, but the need is there. Mel gives Linderbaum to the Ravens as well. He's pretty well connected with the Ravens, too. He's from the area. And I thought I was the only one that would mock this, but Mel did it as well, and I like it a lot. They let Bradley Bozeman walk, and as I don't know if Mel's using the same reasoning as me, even if the scheme doesn't fit on paper, it's not like Linderbaum's best scheme, I think he can add more wrinkles to the Ravens' run game, and they have, you know, more ways to win with Lamar in that run game.
Yeah, I don't think Linderbaum is, you know, scheme specific. I don't think he's just a zone blocking center. I think he would be best as a zone blocking center. But if your team runs a lot more power concepts, I think he's fine. You don't look at his tape and be like, oh, that dude cannot hold up against anybody with any kind of power. Like,
a center really doesn't have a tough role when you run power and counter. They back block.
Yeah.
And you just don't let a dude cross your face.
Right. It's a lot more about speed and athleticism anyway.
Yeah. And it's more about when you're watching Linderbaum's tape and you're watching Iowa run zone like crazy, and the dude gets to the second level like an animal, and he's fast and quick, and he's like a, you know, Jason Kelce type. You would say his best scheme is Shanahan outside zone, or someone that's gonna, you know, let him pull and get in space and all that stuff. And my point is, yeah, I mean it's not that tough for the Ravens to just add that to the mix, right? Run those concepts a little bit more and play to Linderbaum's strength. So I like this pick a lot for the Ravens at 14. Puts the Eagles on the board for the first of three. Not in a row, but total. They're going Jermaine Johnson, edge from Florida State. And, you know, there you go. Another guy who's not completely in that Trayvon Walker mix, but one really good year of production, had that dominant Senior Bowl week. But Jermaine Johnson, middle of the first round here, going to the Eagles, who always do love to draft edge defenders in the first round.
Yeah, and generally need to restock that defensive line. Like, Philadelphia's defensive line was at its best when they ran seven deep of guys that could generate pressure. They're nowhere near that right now. Even signing Hassan Reddick in free agency, they bring back Fletcher Cox at a cheaper deal. Fletcher Cox does not look anything like the player that he used to be, so they need to restock bodies.
Because just to make sure that we push back on the Aiden Hutchinson bias, and to show that we do read the comments sometimes, someone did say, when I mentioned Jermaine Johnson, I mentioned as a red flag, 1 year of production.
Yeah.
And Aiden Hutchinson has 1 year of good production and then 1 year of elite production. So somebody's like, well, Hutchinson only has 1 year of production as well. Kind of true. The difference is Jermaine Johnson, his best year, it's an 81 overall grade. That is, again, compared to historical first rounders and guys that have hit, that is subpar compared to historical first rounders. And it's the only year of production that we have from Jermaine Johnson. He played a couple years at Georgia, only 215 or fewer snaps in those 2 years. Last year, Jermaine Johnson was good, not great, maybe a little bit better down the stretch. Winning at the Senior Bowl, I think, matters. I think that, you know, kind of solidified him as a first rounder. But he was also one of those guys. We had him with 14 sacks out of 46 total pressures. That's why the sack total's a lot higher than the pass rush grade. And, you know, if you're a longtime listener, you know, beware of those dudes. Beware of the dudes that don't win one-on-one all that often, but then have, you know, a massive sack total. So that's all with Jermaine Johnson. He's another one of those guys I would probably look more toward late first or in the second round. Maybe he's a bit of a late bloomer, and maybe there's something to it. I just think from a production standpoint, historically, against the standards that work at the NFL level, Jermaine Johnson is just below that.
What do you make? Do you put any stock into how dominant he was at the Senior Bowl?
I do. I do think that's a thing. That's why I use the term late bloomer, right? It's like he's got this season. It's his first real full season.
And also, so remember with him, he's another one of those guys where it's not like he just sucked for the first few years. Like, that guy was buried on...
He didn't have opportunity.
Right. Buried on Georgia's defense, which we talked about before, being loaded with these first-round talents and athletes and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, transfers to get a better opportunity and does well.
Now, yeah.
Again, not insanely well. Like, he didn't have the kind of season that Hutchinson had in terms of pass rushing and winning one-on-one, all those kinds of things, but it was very good in his first opportunity and continued to look good at the Senior Bowl, arguably better than he had during his season.
Yeah, and this isn't like a knock on him. I'm just trying to...
Well, it is, but like, it's a fair one.
Yeah, but I'm trying to just... I would knock him down a few pegs.
Right.
Because to me, it's riskier given the history. This is similar to how I felt about Gregory Rousseau last year. Rousseau did not. He sat out 2020. In 2019, he had the absurd sack totals, not a great pass rush grade. But Rousseau was one of those guys. If he had played at Miami in 2020, probably would have had the breakout season that led to him being a top 10 pick. The Bills drafted him. He did have a good rookie season. But I think what happens with those types of players, even if they do pan out, there's risk that it might take them a year or two in the NFL to develop. And you're paying for that, right? You're not seeing the development in college. You're seeing it at the NFL level on the field. And, you know, so it doesn't always necessarily work out. So I would call more of a late first or second rounder for me, given that history. And I would just, you know, bump other players like the guy that they get later. I think they get Chris Olave later. Like, I would take Olave way ahead of Jermaine Johnson, given the positional value and things. And that's what they do here at 16. The Eagles go Chris Olave at wide receiver. I like this a lot. It's third straight year that the Eagles would draft a wide receiver. But with three first-round picks, I think that's perfectly fine.
Just to put a bow on the Jermaine Johnson thing, he was one of the best-graded players during the week of practices at the Senior Bowl. PFF grades all those one-on-one drills, they grade the team drills, all that kind of stuff we have done for years. And he had like a phenomenally good grade, 90-plus pass rush grade.
He was awesome. Yep.
Right up there with Devontae Wyatt, by the way, who's another name to be aware of, like dominated the Senior Bowl.
But and the only difference is Wyatt was a little bit more productive
right
during the season as well.
On
so, yeah,
that loaded Georgia defense.
I'm trying to give, because you're purposely trying to sort these prospects. You have to put them on a board, and mm-hmm. it's all about, you know, risk management and all that stuff. And there are things to think about with Jermaine Johnson. I wouldn't take him top 10 or 15.
This is the first
pick. I could be wrong.
The Eagles now with 16, Chris Olave, that I don't like.
Really?
Yeah. I like adding wide receiver help. I think they're still in need of that. I think Olave is a redundant skill set within that offense.
Man, so you're generally like the guy who just gets open.
Yeah, they already have one. In fact, they have multiple. Devontae Smith.
How is that a bad thing?
How is it a bad thing? Because the problem with the Eagles' offense right now, as a receiving option standpoint, is not like lack of good players. It's that they're all the same. You don't have the different. You don't have the missing skill set. That none of these guys is like a big physical receiver that can go and just take the ball away from somebody. You don't have that in the offense. So right now you have Jalen Hurts as your quarterback, who, let's be honest, whatever you think of him right now, is a flawed quarterback overall. Trying to get it done with a bunch of receivers that are all the same, generally speaking, skill set wise, style. You need the different thing to try and coax a different part of Jalen Hurts out. Like, if he's not going to put the ball in the air to the guys that he already has, adding one more guy that can get open and is quick isn't going to make him.
Who's going to make him put the ball in the air? Like a Drake London type?
Something like that, yeah. A guy who's got that physical.
I think if he's got an open Devontae Smith and an open Chris Olave, chances are he'll pick one of them.
He hasn't been so far. He's had an open Devontae Smith all season long. He's just been staring at him.
And maybe Jalen Hurts isn't the guy.
Well, maybe Jalen Hurts isn't the guy. Or maybe Jalen Hurts is one of these guys who like needs to look at a receiver and be like, that guy's 6'3" and a monster. Let's give him a shot. Right? Maybe, like, all I'm saying is, as long as he's your quarterback, which he is right now, because apparently you're not, you know, you've said he's your guy. You're not, at the moment, spending first-round picks on another quarterback. So he's the dude. What helps him out more? Getting another receiver that's basically the same as the ones he's not maximizing right now, or adding something different to that receiving core.
He's added more speed. Sub 4.4, baby.
Barely.
Olave's fast. Game speed was faster than Garrett Wilson. He's got speed.
Yeah, though not as much as they thought he did when Hair Trigger, what's his name? Ross? Hair Trigger Ross was on the
Mark
stopwatch.
Ross. He's like 4.18. Chris Olave, 4.18.
Unofficial.
Officially 4.39. Anyway, I don't hate the Olave pick as much as you do.
Yeah, I don't like
it. Take it up with Mel.
Now, look, I will say that London's already gone, and he's the one obvious guy that you'd be like, that's that skill set in this first round. So if you're not drafting him,
if you want a different skill set, you want Jameson Williams. That's a different skill set.
It is, but I don't know. I want a bigger body guy that Jalen Hurts might actually throw the ball to. So I want Drake London. If he's not there, I'm not drafting a guy at 16.
Man, I disagree. Give me more good receivers.
I'll come back in the second round and try and get like a George Pickens or a Christian Watson or somebody like that.
At least you have a plan. At least you have a plan. They'll come back at 20 as well. The Chargers at 17, they're going to go Trevor Penning, tackle from Northern Iowa. once again on the PFF NFL Daily today, which we'll give away. So I'm going to give away another Edge subscription. This time I'll name somebody. I still have to look up the guy that won.
Rather than the dude that signed up his wife.
Yeah. Well, the dude who signed up his wife is getting a free Edge subscription once I track down his email.
Okay.
Or DM and send it to him. But I'll give away another one if you guys send me a screenshot. Show me that you're subscribed to the PFF NFL Daily and PFF NFL Podcast. But today, I did mention the Chargers. Right tackle need. Brian Bulaga released. Don't have a right tackle. Trevor Penning could be the guy. Bernard Raimann could be the guy in the first round. I like this a lot. Getting that right tackle, filling that need, but also value. Not just filling needs, but value pick here for the Chargers. Because it's at the right time as far as the board goes.
Yeah. I mean, again, like, there probably is no reason why you should want your left tackle to be the technician and the pass blocker and your right tackle to be the, like, nasty mauler, run-blocking specialist. But there's something, like, there's something neat and fitting about that.
There is.
You know? And this would be perfect, right? Rashawn Slater at left tackle was the absolute embodiment of a technician pass blocker last season. He's a good run blocker as well, but, you know, a guy that could go one-on-one with the best pass blockers in the NFL as a rookie. And then Trevor Penning, like, the one thing, his calling card is just that nastiness to a fault, like multiple plays at the Senior Bowl where he's tossing edge rushers into his own quarterback. That's not ideal. But, you know, the guy said at the podium at the combine, he wants to make defenders hate him. Like, that's his, he's an asshole deliberately on the field. And that is just, it's so perfect for a right tackle. So, yeah, I'm all for it.
Yeah, I think that's a good pick for the Chargers. Fits a need. It's a good player. So that's 17. Chargers go Trevor Penning, the offensive tackle from Northern Iowa. Here's where it gets really interesting, Sam. Mm. The New Orleans Saints are on the board, and we finally have the best or the top quarterback go. The first quarterback go.
Yeah.
Let's say that again. We're at 18, and the first quarterback is off the board. It's Kenny Pickett to the Saints at 18 overall. He's the guy that they're going to build around in New Orleans, per Mel Kiper.
Yeah. Don't love it.
I know you were knee-deep in Kenny Pickett tape.
Knee-deep in Pickett tape.
The other day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't love his tape.
Yeah.
I don't think his hands are an issue, and they're even less of an issue in a dome, but I just don't think Kenny Pickett's very good.
I love you coming around to the dome. Yeah, he's in a dome. It's fine. It's fine.
Well, I'm just saying, you're not going to get rained out in the dome and have it affect your seat tack gloves. You're going to be fine.
I feel like Mel did this just so we could let Malik Willis fall to the Steelers at 20. Just to match, because, like, everybody knows that they love Malik Willis, and Mel probably has this limit. Editor's like, hey, you can't make any trades. Steelers will probably trade up for Malik Willis, but you're not allowed to do it here in your mock, so he just, like, lets him fall.
I mean, so that's the other component here, is that the Saints do have Jameis Winston. They're not in a position where they need to force a quarterback to start day one. And they could afford to chase upside, ceiling, development, potential, which is Malik Willis. Like, ironically, I actually think if you're going to start one of those two guys day one, I would start Willis before Pickett, given their flaws. I actually think the things that you see on tape that are problems for Kenny Pickett, I think are bigger problems in terms of starting immediately than the things you see on Malik Willis's tape. Like, Kenny Pickett's problems are, the dude holds onto the ball in age. When he holds onto the ball, bad things tend to happen. Like, he panics in the pocket, drops his eye, starts running around, and doesn't make plays in the passing game once he's under pressure and, like, extending the play. So that's generally not a good thing. Now, I think his offensive line at the next level is probably going to be better than the one he had at Pitt. But still, like, that's a concerning flaw. We've talked about this before, right? What's the single biggest problem for young quarterbacks in the NFL? It's how long they hold on to the ball. The game speed, right? That's where that game speed stuff manifests. It's you hold on to the ball too long and get into trouble. That's Pickett's biggest flaw at the college level. So it's soon going to be worse at the NFL. That's not the guy I would take. That sums up my feelings.
As always, the descriptor is most equipped to run an NFL offense. You know, and I don't know.
And what is that,
though? I just don't know how valuable that is, though, either. Like, I guess if you're looking, that would fit Mac Jones' description last year, right? So maybe the Patriots got.
But Mac Jones, the difference is Mac Jones was incredibly good at processing, was really accurate.
He was better at everything else.
Right, and would get the ball out of his hands quickly. Like, those are three things that are useful
in terms of being a day one starter. Pickett, okay, he's pretty accurate, but he doesn't process as quickly as Mac Jones. He doesn't get the ball out of his hands as quickly as Mac Jones. It doesn't always go to the right guy. So he's not like that's not the same.
Kenny Pickett also, I mean, if I'm gonna highlight Jermaine Johnson and guys that are one-year wonders, Pickett's grades. I mean, he did start in 2018, 60. 2019, 75. 2020, about 70. And then last year, 92. Right? So he did have an excellent 2021 season for Pittsburgh. He did break out. He did have, you know, one of his best games against New Hampshire. But, like, he was good across the board last year. Didn't have a lot of disastrous games. But I don't know what you do with that. I do think a lot of what you saw in film from a negative standpoint last year still exists. The other thing, as you mentioned, he holds on to the ball forever. His average time to throw, time in pocket, is over 3 seconds across 5 years of action. He took snaps in 2017 as well. Last year, 3.19.
That in college.
And yes, that number is generally reserved for somebody that's making plays outside of structure, right? And if he had some highlight reel plays. I mean, just like Mac Jones had some highlight reel plays outside of structure. But we highlighted this as a huge concern for Zach Wilson last year. In the NFL, time to throw was super high, whether he was under pressure or not, without a high average depth of target. This would be a huge concern, I think, for Pickett going forward. Is he's not Mac Jones, even though you get the same descriptor of most equipped to run an NFL offense. It doesn't mean we should equate Mac Jones and Kenny Pickett last year to this year.
Now, to be fair, like we just said, New Orleans has the luxury of sitting him for a year. They don't have to put him out there. They've got Jameis Winston. He doesn't need to play. The problem just becomes if you're going to do that, if you're going to take the approach of we have a quarterback that can sit for a year before he needs to be good, then why is Pickett the guy? Because there's no way, like there's no, I don't think even in a Kenny Pickett friendly analysis, there's really a world where he has the highest ceiling of any of these guys.
Right.
So why is he the guy that you're chasing with that?
Quote Mel here. This is a strange quarterback class, and the range on when Pickett and Malik Willis come off the board varies from everyone I talk to in the league. No one knows for sure. I would not be shocked if either of them fall into New Orleans' lap here. And I really think Mel just said, I want to match Malik Willis in the steal. I feel like sometimes you start a mock draft with like your best fit at like 20. I feel like he just started, like, yeah, Malik Willis is going to the Steelers because it's the best fit. It's going to make for the best content. That's just my guess here. But Mel has the same questions about where these guys are going to fall here in late March as anyone else does. That puts the Eagles up on the board again at 19. I mentioned 20 earlier, but they're 19. They're going to get Devin Lloyd, the linebacker from Utah. We've seen this match.
That's going to be one of the most common like player team matches.
Just a matter of where, right?
Yeah, to be fair, there's 3 first-round picks, so there's a better chance of the Eagles grabbing than anybody else. But, Devin Lloyd to Philadelphia seems to be in every single mock somewhere in those first 3 picks.
Eagles fans, Jermaine Johnson, Chris Olave, and then linebacker Devin Lloyd. Pretty similar haul to what a lot of people give them, right? You get 3 of those mid-first-round picks off the consensus board or the PFF board, and you just, hope you got some players there. I think Lloyd is really good, I think, a good fit for their scheme and everything, and 19 is probably a good spot for him to go.
Yeah, he's a prototypical linebacker in terms of what you're looking for now. Now, the issue is that linebackers struggle translating to the NFL at the moment just because of how hard it is to play that position. So it's a risk. It's a gamble. But finally, Philadelphia is like addressing an area that's been a massive need for years.
All right, let's go. Steelers at 20. There's Malik Willis. And, you got Mitch Trubisky with this incentive-laden deal. You know, it'll be one of those, Mitch Trubisky's our starter, and whenever Malik Willis is ready, he's going to take over.
Yeah.
Just like Trubisky had to, it was more Dalton last year. But Trubisky didn't have to deal with that at all. Forget it.
Okay.
But yeah, Trubisky's your starter and Malik Willis has taken over the future of the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah. All right. Don't hate it. I mean, Malik Willis is the guy that I would target from this quarterback class of somebody I would take a gamble on. I don't love any of them, but he's the guy with the freakish arm, he's got the rushing ability. Like, I think he's a better rusher than Jalen Hurts. And Jalen Hurts added like 800 yards and 10 touchdowns to his totals last year just from his rushing threat, right? If Pittsburgh's willing to tap into that, that's why I think you can start Malik Willis day one. Like the difference. So even if he's not a great passer, Jalen Hurts
was not a great passer last year, but the Eagles rank like top 10 in EPA per play because his rushing threat is off the charts. And he's not even the best rushing threat in the NFL. Like, you've got Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen. Malik Willis is in that bracket, right? The Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, Jalen Hurts, he can be in that bucket of quarterbacks that brings that kind of ability on the ground, which massively raises the floor of how bad that offense can be, even if he sucks as a passer.
That's what's changed about the NFL in recent years. Let's talk your slider theory again, right? Where you usually look at quarterbacks.
Well, that's the missing element to that, right? Is that the slider theory doesn't have rushing to it.
That's what I was going to add to it, right? You usually start with arm strength and accuracy, but in today's NFL, you can add rushing. 10, 15 years ago, you wouldn't add rushing because the NFL wasn't legitimately building an offense around a quarterback's rushing ability. Other than Michael Vick, but that wasn't even designed. That was just, oh, by the way, he's going to scramble a lot.
They didn't even build it.
They didn't build it at all.
What the rushing thing would do, I think, is like it would sort of increase all of the sliders by a magnitude of however good the rushing threat was. You know what I mean? It would raise the overall baseline of what he's coming out as.
Lamar Jackson's accuracy has gotten better since being in the NFL.
A lot better.
It has gotten a lot better. But it didn't even necessarily need to because he's got more open throws because of the rush threat. Again, this is what you can do with Jalen Hurts. It's what you can do with Taysom Hill. It's what you can do with Malik Willis. The Bills have also just decided to do it with Josh Allen, even though with his development they didn't really need to. They just decided, you know, he's also a freak as a rusher, so let's do that as well. But that's the value of having a Malik Willis. He doesn't have to be pristine as a passer. You can get away with subpar accuracy. And then you just get the arm talent is amazing with Willis.
Yeah.
But the Steelers, they have to craft the offense around him, right? Mm-hmm. So let him sit, craft the offense around him, and see what happens in 2023 with Malik Willis.
Or, as I said, like I think that rushing floor means you can put him out there.
Put him out there right now.
So if your plan is, let's start Trubisky and see how it goes. Like, if Trubisky sucks the first 3 weeks, and who knows? Like, Trubisky might play much closer to what we thought he would be than what he ended up being. Like, if Trubisky plays badly in the first 3 weeks, I don't think you don't need to necessarily say, I don't know, we've got a plan, we can't put Malik. Like, throw him out there. What the hell? Or if Trubisky plays well, again, good problem to have.
Given that Malik Willis is the only guy that's, like, really connected to a team. I mean, the Steelers are the only team that's really connected to a quarterback at this point, right? Other than maybe the Panthers, you know, making sure that Kenny Pickett can hold the ball without dropping it, right?
I can't believe that's the thing that happened.
That did.
Hold this ball first for a sec. Oh, yeah.
Maybe it's smoke. Maybe it's a smoke screen.
Come here, look at this. You see? It doesn't fall out or anything.
It would be so much better if they're like, all right, hose it down. Now try it.
It didn't.
Bring your own snowball, throw a snowball on it. Yeah. Now try it.
Have you seen the video of it? It doesn't look quite as absurd as
of course
it sounds.
Not. You heard a secondhand media report, so of course it sounds ridiculous.
Yeah. But even just like, forget the how it's phrase, like simply saying it out loud sounds ridiculous, right? They made him hold a football and like looked at it, but you know, you could see McAdoo or whatever, they get him to, it's like, oh, show us your freaky little hands with your weird thumb, and he's like, eh, there you go, and then it's like, hold a ball, show me how it works. So just like,
show me how it works.
But you know what I mean, like whatever is with his weird thumb, they're just like, yeah, now hold a football and show me how, like, just show me what it looks like, you holding a ball versus somebody else. He just holds the ball and they're like, yeah, see, yeah.
Speaking of Malik Willis and the Steelers, you've got the owners' meetings, whatever they got going on right now, where Andy Reid wears all the Hawaiian shirts.
Yes.
So you're getting a lot of quotes from coaches and execs and all that stuff right now. Tomlin, from the Pittsburgh media here, Tomlin on his impressions of Liberty quarterback Malik Willis. Quote, really impressive, sharp, grounded, comfortable in his skin, end quote. So they're asking, like the media is asking a lot about Malik Willis, and Tomlin's not really shying away from complimenting the young man, so it could happen. I kind of want to see it happen with all the smoke around it right now. New England Patriots at 21. This is where Jameson Williams comes off the board for Mel Kiper. Here's your speed receiver.
Not a chance.
For Mac Jones.
Not a chance.
You don't think the Patriots go back? You just think they're just out on
I don't
wide
think
receivers.
There's a force in the world known to man that could make Bill Belichick draft another wide receiver in the first round again for as long as he coaches.
What if he just gets it right?
Yeah, well, he might, but he won't. He's not going to try it. He's not going to risk it.
What if he goes full Costanza and you just do the opposite of whatever you think?
Uh-huh.
You take your receiver grades You take whoever you had in the third round, and you put them in the first. Like, because he, I mean, Belichick probably had third round grades on like Julio Jones and AJ Green and all that stuff. I mean, right? Knowing his history, he's probably like, oh, this guy's too tall, or you know, this guy doesn't want it enough. Whatever it is, he had a first round grade on N'Keal Harry. Probably had Julio in the third.
Yeah.
So you just flip it, Costanza style, upside down. And that's your receiver board.
I just don't think there's anything in the world that would make that guy draft a receiver in the first round again.
A.J. Brown, Debo Samuel. These guys are way too good. Give me N'Keal Harry.
Yeah.
That's what happened.
Yeah.
So he flips the board upside
down.
We're
not doing it
again. And he's got the Ohio State guys. He's got Drake London. And all of a sudden, he's got Jameson Williams as well.
By the way, also, they're like desperate for a starting corner. So it's not even like. Wide receiver is definitely a need, but it's not like it's the obvious, most glaring need that they absolutely have to prioritize ahead of anything else. If you're on the fence and you're like, hey, Bill, here's the situation. You know, number 21 is up. There's some wide receivers on the board that are pretty good. Bill's like, yeah. There's also corners that are on the board, and it turns out we need one of those as well. Bill is immediately going, all right, corner it is.
I just don't know if the corner value's here. There's probably a drop-off after the top three or so, right?
Yeah, but we've dropped in picks as well. We're like 10 picks further on.
Yeah. Patriots always, you know, kind of do their own thing.
Yeah.
You never know where they're going to go. Jameson Williams, I would, if they did go this way, adding a speed receiver to Jacoby Myers and Kendrick Bourne and the tight ends and all that stuff, this would be a nice addition.
I like the fit. I just don't think there's a chance in hell that Bill Belichick makes that selection with corners on the board and, you know, not a gun tied to his, like, pointed to his head.
Come on, Mel, you're drunk. Sam doesn't believe this will ever happen. Now, the Packers at 22. This is going to be great. Mel's just watching the world burn here. You get to 22. You pan to Mel Kiper on the ESPN set. Packers, first of second, two first-round picks.
Remember, no wide receivers in the building.
Remember, they've got no receivers. They just traded Devontae Adams.
Never given Aaron Rodgers any help.
It's the last hurrah for Aaron Rodgers. Wait, the pick is in. Guard, Kenyon Green, Texas A&M.
Yeah.
Mel's just watching, just wants to see Green Bay burn.
Can you imagine the boos from the whatever Green Bay fans, you know, collection of Green Bay fans they have for the reaction pick thing, you know, the reaction montage, just the volume, the crescendo of boos would start to circulate where they pass up wide receiver for a guard.
That'd be amazing. I think it's funny. Kenyon Green, good player. They could use a guard. All that stuff's fine.
I mean, look, every draft needs a hysterical first round pick, and this would be that.
This would be hysterical.
Yeah.
The Packers, everybody's talking about getting help for Aaron Rodgers and the help they get.
Even if they get a wide receiver with the second pick, the idea that like the first one you're going to do is go for a guard.
Which they do. Breaking news. You know. Spoiler alert. They will pick a wide receiver later.
Just hilarious. I would be all on board. That would make for like 20 minutes of absolute comedy.
I think the best fit for the Packers at 22, though, is if Chris Olave is there at 22, I think that would be great for them.
I mean, they literally don't have, like, they have Alan Lazard. That's their only wide receiver.
Cobb is still under contract.
They need a wide receiver of any description. It doesn't matter. Like, there's all these different receivers and they're different styles for different offense. No, all of them fit. Grab one. Doesn't matter. Pick your favorite. Grab them there at number 22.
Well, they're going Kenyon Green, guard, at 22. So that's where the Packers go with the pick that they got from the Raiders in the Devontae Adams trade. Arizona Cardinals are going Devontae Wyatt. There's your next interior defensive lineman from Georgia. And Wyatt had the best grade of all the Georgia defensive linemen last year. More of an interior disruptor.
Right?
What's that?
The ones that are available in this draft, right?
Yes.
He wasn't best overall.
Was he not?
I don't think so. Wasn't that
you might Carter? Be right. Was in who?
Carter.
I don't know. Look at you, college football expert here.
Yeah.
Look it up. Devontae Wyatt. So, look, the Cardinals are one of those teams, too, of all the playoff teams that have slowly kind of left some holes on the roster. Need some defensive line help. Need some receiver help. Need some corner help.
No, you're right. You did have a better grade than Carter, but Carter had a better pass rushing grade.
Oh, okay. There you go.
Jalen Carter, who's supposed to be the best player on that defensive line.
After all these, you know, incredible
athletes.
Right.
The list of first rounders coming out, and the best one amongst them is supposed to be Jalen Carter.
Devontae Wyatt. We'll throw him on because I already have a comp for him. We'll throw him on the. I want to do a comp show, player comp show, maybe. Let us know if that's something you would. If we just had two other NFL draft experts, I got two in mind, and we just pick, say, 10, 15, 20 players, whatever we can handle, and we just give our player comps for those players. And that's the show. Talk through it and all that stuff. We all give, we name a player, and all four people give the comps. That'd be a good podcast, I think.
Yeah. The Wyatt versus Jordan Davis thing is fascinating because Devontae Wyatt is a better player. He's been a better player. He's a more obvious translation to the NFL in that he's like 305 pounds. He pass rushes well. He's quick. He's the guy that makes sense, right? But yet Jordan Davis is 350 pounds and had an insane combine. So all of a sudden we're projecting, what can Jordan Davis become at the next level that makes him way better than Devontae Wyatt? You're like, well, yeah, I mean, it's possible, but the chances are not great. So I think what I'm saying is that the Jordan Davis hype, I think, is going to end up playing into some team getting a freaking steal with Devontae Wyatt.
Yeah, I love this fit for the Cardinals. I've given him to the Cowboys at 24, the next pick. So
best graded defender on either side at the week of the Senior Bowl practices, Devontae Wyatt, a 94.8 pass rushing grade during the week of practices.
Good get off, change of direction, explosion, all of it's great. Yeah, really good.
He was nuts. Like, he was absolutely dominant at the Senior Bowl. In addition to being the best player on that defensive line last year, way better than Jordan Davis, and he has a way more natural NFL skill set and build and body type and all those kinds of things. And but yet, in this draft, he's going 10
picks.
Him
and Jordan Davis are playing different positions, though.
Yeah, but sort of.
I mean, it's like a pure Wyatt's more of a three technique, get up the field. He's not going to take on double teams the way Jordan Davis will.
Also,
Davis,
by the way, way more common and important in today's NFL than the other spot.
Right, I agree. So I think this is great value for the Cardinals. Good job, Mel. Good match there with the Cardinals and Wyatt. Cowboys at 24. Here's a fascinating pick. Monster tackle / guard, Tyler Smith from Tulsa. Played tackle at Tulsa. He's one of those maulers. And with the Cowboys, they have a hole now at left guard. Probably kick him into guard. And just, you know, the Cowboys are one of those teams that you mentioned. They generally pick for need, even though I think the last 2 years they came off that a little bit. But this would fit a need, and this is your Connor Williams replacement.
Yeah. Which is an intriguing one because
he's graded really well through the years.
He's been I've seen him labeled as the group of five version of Ike Ekwonu.
Yes. I think that's a great – I have not seen that. I think that's a great cop. The dude wants to – mall people.
Yeah. But what's interesting about this is they grab him and move him to guard rather than grab a guy like Zion Johnson, who's arguably just the best guard in this draft.
Yeah, different types of players. I mean, Zion's a little bit more of a zone blocker, better, you know, probably moves a little bit better. Tyler Smith's a dude who just wrecks people. Probably an unexciting pick for Cowboys fans. Remember, sometimes you just go through these off seasons and you're just like, how's my team going to get better, right? And you hope that everything from last year remains the same and that you add new pieces that make you better. And sometimes with the Cowboys, you've lost some of those pieces, one of which is your left guard, and you just have to fill that spot in. And that's your first-round pick. So it's an unexciting pick. But again, I don't necessarily hate it. I mean, I think Smith will add a lot to the run game.
At this point, the best Dallas can hope for is to come in or to go into next year looking as good as they did this time a year ago. Right, is to basically just stay exactly where you were and not have taken steps backwards. Now, unfortunately, the rest of the NFL has taken steps forward, it seems, or at least the contenders, all of them loaded up. So relative to everybody else, you may have taken a step backwards. But at this point, given their losses and the way they've elected to play this offseason, the best you're going to do if you're Dallas is staying the same, at which point you're going to have to live with some unexciting picks because you've let go of two of your five starting offensive linemen.
That puts the Bills up at 25. Jahan Dotson, the wide receiver out of Penn State. So he's an interesting guy that I think early in the PFF draft board, we kind of had him as a late first-round pick, dropped him a little bit. I think that's sometimes what happens with kind of reminds me of Michael Gallup a little bit. Doesn't that do anything? He's just a good, dependable-looking receiver that, Gallup we had as a fringe first-round type of player for a while, ends up going in the second. We ended up having him in the second as well. Dotson, good ball skills, doesn't drop the ball a whole lot, but another receiver for the Bills. My question is, Stephon Diggs is, tweeting stuff. But interesting, right? He's seeing the wide receiver market, right? Will the Bills, and this is the other teams that have massive quarterback contracts like Aaron Rodgers and Patrick Mahomes have just gotten rid of their top receivers. Are the Bills going to have to do that at some point? And should they be looking to the future right now? Not only adding wide receiver depth, because they released Cole Beasley and even brought in Jameson Crowder, all that stuff, but look into the future and eventually having to replace Stephon Diggs because maybe they can't afford him.
Yeah. Should they be? As in, is that what this pick is?
No, I'm just thinking out loud here. I don't think that's what this pick is. I think this is just, once again, when you're mock drafting, we debated last week. There's no massive hole for the Bills other than maybe cornerback two. If there's not a great fit, you pick what you think the best player is. Sometimes it's a center and you have nowhere to play him, whatever. But with Dotson, that's probably what Mel's thinking here. But yeah. I'm now thinking, looking forward, is Stephon Diggs going to want Tyreek Hill, Devontae Adams money? And can the Bills even afford that with all the Josh Allen long-term contract?
Either way, I don't think this pick affects that.
This one shouldn't.
I don't think that Dotson's capable of being a Stephon Diggs replacement even down the line. I don't love this pick either. I think that Buffalo has bigger needs. And as much as, you know, we had a whole argument before about, hey, you don't draft for need, you draft the best player and you figure out how it works later. I think that makes sense when the best player is so obviously value at this point. And I don't think Dotson is. So I don't like it in either way of defending it, right? It's not the biggest area of need. And I think you do have value at cornerback at this spot. I think you have value at offensive line in this spot if you want to try and make sure that group doesn't suffer. And if you were saying, okay, like if Garrett Wilson or something had slipped to 25, sure, grab Garrett Wilson, because at that point the value is just too good to turn down, much like my Linderbaum argument. I just don't think that applies to Jahan Dotson, so I don't like the pick.
Yeah, I think there's always danger. I mean, you mentioned the offensive line depth and corner are specific places that they can that the Bills can go. Remember this happened with the Jaguars a couple years ago? Like, on paper, their roster actually looked good. They had all these former first-rounders everywhere. Didn't look like they had massive needs. And then it felt like a luxury pick getting Leonard Fournette at four, a running back at four, because people are like, oh, like, what do they need? Just a tight end and a running back. That's all they need. And you just fill these needs. Then the roster falls apart. You just always have to be careful by just like slotting in a need for a team, thinking that the roster feels great, because needs change all the time. So, yeah, there might be a better place for the Bills to go here at 25. Titans at 26, they go offensive line. That's where Zion Johnson comes off the board. Boston College guard, who did used to play tackle. I think some teams are looking at him potentially at center as well. But the Titans adding another starter after they release Roger Saffold. So Zion Johnson fits an immediate need. One pick ahead of the Tampa Bay Bucks, who also need a guard, and I think Zion Johnson would fit extremely well for the Bucks at 27.
Remember when they traded up to get Tristan Wirfs, right?
They traded from 14 to 13 to get Tristan Wirfs, though they were trying to get up to 7.
Right, and if you look at the two teams in front of them, Tennessee here, grab a guard. I think Buffalo would have been better served to grab Zion Johnson than Jahan Dotson. So maybe this is a spot where Tampa Bay tries to repeat the trick and says, you know, the one spot we need to tick off going into this draft is that first-round pick basically needs to go on a starting guard. And if Kenyon Green is gone and Zion Johnson is sitting there and, you know, all of a sudden that interior, there's a drop-off after that first wave, Tampa Bay might have to make a move and jump up a few spots to try and grab him.
So Zion goes at 26. Mel does mention that Zion Johnson, if he's available, probably is the pick or could be the pick. But and the reason why we're saying the Bills need a guard, Cody Ford slated to be the starting guard. Ryan Bates has been offered, I believe, tendered an offer from the Giants, so he might be. The Bills have to potentially match that, so there could be a guard need, as you mentioned, for the Bills. But the Bucks, they're going Breece Hall, the running back from Iowa State. Mel admits he made this pick before the Bucks re-signed Leonard Fournette, but I'm not going to change it.
No, why would you do that?
This is the other interesting one, because if let's say the Bucks fill left guard and, you know, third wave of free agency or whatever it is, you could easily see them making the argument like, what are we missing? Big play, explosion at the running back position, right? We've got receivers. Let's assume Gronk's going to come back. Like, what are you missing? An explosive playmaker at running back. We thought the Bucs could go running back last year in the first round. They went Joe Tryon, but we thought they could go Travis Etienne or Najee Harris if either of them was available, because they could have looked at the roster and said, what are we missing? Explosive playmaker in the pass game at running back. And still in that point?
Where do you think Tom Brady falls on the running backs don't matter conversation?
I think he thinks that they, even though there's a lot of evidence in his entire career that, and he's gone from Kevin Falk to James White and Shane Vereen, and it doesn't really matter. He finds a guy, and he made Leonard Fournette. Like, Leonard Fournette was a good, as the season went on, he became a reasonable pass-catching running back. I think Brady would like it. I think Brady would still like it, despite all the evidence. Here's the difference, though. The difference in the way Brady used running backs in New England versus the Bucs. With the Bucs, it's like legitimate checkdowns, right? You drop back, trying to get the ball down the field, or you're trying to get to the ball to your receivers or tight ends, and if they're not there, you throw it to a running back who's in a checkdown position, right? He's just there underneath, and he's going to turn, get upfield, and get yards. In New England, the running back was actually a part of the pass concept, right? If they had a one-on-one, you run a little option route against the linebacker, you line them up out wide, and you take advantage, and they're running slants and slant and goes and all that stuff. So you don't need a running back in the Bucs offense to like run the whole route tree. You actually just need somebody that did what Fournette did last year, which was catch the ball, which he did much better at, and just get upfield, make a guy miss every now and again. So I don't know if they would go Breece Hall.
I find it fascinating that these great quarterbacks seem to have a very old school conservative slant when it comes to these sort of topics, right? These areas of current NFL debate about where's the value, what matters more, how do these things work? Like when you listen to Peyton Manning and he talks about analytics or when to go for it or when not, like he sounds like a talking points list for like the old conservative way of doing it. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, but this drive hasn't gone so well so far, so you can't go for it in fourth down because the last two downs didn't go well. Like he's literally reading like a talking points thing of like the reasons you don't do this, which most of which have been at least fairly strongly rebuffed by, evidence. So I agree. I think actually in a weird way, Tom Brady, I think, would love it. If you drafted a first-round running back, you're like, this guy's got a complete skill set, Tom. He's going to come in, make the offense better. Brady would be, like, celebrating. Be like, awesome, great pick. Couldn't love it more.
I think so, too.
I just find that fascinating, given all we know about running backs.
I think that less, though, because Fournette did have his best season overall. He just did look a lot better last year, and Brady always seemed to have confidence in him, and he's back for multiple years now. So, anyway, that would be... I mean, it wouldn't hurt to add speed to the offense, but there's probably other ways to go for the Bucs there at 27. Packers are back up at 28 after getting a guard at 22. Here's the receiver. It's Treylon Burks from Arkansas. There's your receiver. How do you like the fit of Treylon Burks to the Packers and Aaron Rodgers?
Well, as I said, they need everything. So what the hell?
Every type of receiver?
Yes.
You mean?
Yeah. Grab a wide receiver. It doesn't really matter which one. Just get one that'll contribute day one. Now, that being said, Treylon Burks has a lot missing from his tape in terms of, a complete route tree, wanting him to do everything within an offense. Like, if you need him to come in and be your number one day one, I don't know how much that's going to work. But he's got an entire tape full of, like, just get this guy the ball and good things will happen, which is important. So I would suggest that his floor, if you're willing to use him that way, should be very high. Of worst case scenario, he can do nothing more right now than we saw in his tape at Arkansas. On the other hand, that's still really good. Like, we can get a lot of mileage out of that, and then we'll figure out how to get the rest of it from other players. But, like, if you're looking at your receiving core and you're like, well, we have Alan Lazard, so we really need a legit X number one wide receiver, I don't know that he's that guy right away.
Did you have a comp for Burks, given the weird...
Well, it was David Boston before he was slow and,
Well, that's right. It was David Boston. But... A soft David Boston.
What I haven't done yet is go back and rewatch his tape with the context of the combine, which wasn't great, and the workouts, because what do you run, like a 4.55?
4.55, yeah.
And then stood on that at his pro day. Was like, yeah. No, that's as good as I'm going to get.
that. Honestly, that's maybe a bigger red flag than the 4.55 in the first place.
I don't have his game speed handy or anything like that, but he did look faster.
Yes. So what I need to do is to go back and reconcile those two things, because I came away from his tape being like, if you give that guy a crease, he's gone. Like, if you give him a tiny bit of space, he's out running everybody to the end zone. That probably doesn't happen at 4.55. So I need to figure out why those two things are different. I also, you know, the biggest red flag on Burks appears to be weight. You know, issues with weight and conditioning and potentially work ethic, drive, that kind of stuff. Like, he showed up to his sort of pre-draft or pre-combine training system, you know, the camps that they go to, apparently wildly overweight and had to get down to whatever it was, 225.
I've been there.
Sure. But, you know, you didn't get drafted in the first round. So why, in fact, you didn't get drafted at all multiple times.
Well, you got to remind me.
Well, you brought it up. That's a concern. Like, I asked you this question a while ago. Like, can you think of a single wide receiver whose sort of narrative was, this dude has some weight struggles, who is good? Because it was like Mike Williams, you know, the USC guy for like 5 minutes, and then that went to hell. Kelvin Benjamin was capable for like 5 minutes. Again, that went to hell. Like, can you think of a single one that worked out?
No.
This is what I'm saying.
There's actually not many.
Sure. It's a small, it's a very small sample size to begin with. But like, that's a little bit concerning if I'm anybody picking Treylon Burks, is if that's a thing, right? If this guy actually has weight issues, weight management issues, if that's going to be a problem for him, I literally can't think of one of those players that's worked out.
Yeah.
That's not great.
So that said, Burks to Green Bay.
Congrats.
I mean, look, if he goes to Green Bay, there's not a better fit. Because you got the ghee detox. I mean, you're...
Ghee detox.
Right?
You think that's going to... I guess if you... Eight days of that was... What is it?
It's a 12-day...
But how many of them were like ghee therapy?
Three, the first three.
Okay,
I
so
believe.
The first three, that'll shed 10 pounds right out of you.
That's what I'm saying. You, for Burks, you might just... You don't have to do the whole 12 days. Just do the first three.
Okay. So we draft Treylon Burks, and then like the week before training camp, he goes on like an ayahuasca tour with Aaron Rodgers, right?
Yeah.
3 days worth of ghee.
Yeah.
10 pounds gone, right? Then we get the ayahuasca treatment. You know what that is?
No.
That's like that weird psychotherapy drink that sends you on a weird trip to hell, and then it like cures you of everything. But like, it breaks your brain to the point where it like comes back, repairs itself, and then whatever was ailing you before, it doesn't ail you anymore. So we shed 10, 15 pounds right out of him with 3 days worth of ghee, right? Then he loads up on ayahuasca, and at that point, he's not going to have weight management issues anymore because his just brain just got rewired.
Yeah, I would skip the drink part.
No. This is all part of the Aaron Rodgers treatment therapy.
I just wanted 3 days of ghee. That'll be enough. And then Burks
is only,
wide receiver one.
What you've done is solve the symptom, not the disease, not the root cause of the problem.
Ah, the drink
yes.
will solve the
so
disease.
We need the ghee and then the ayahuasca.
Kelly bought some ghee as part of our diet, and I was a little scared.
How much? Because
There's only one little.
Because if you came back with like an entire, you know, full of it, where I'd be.
I was like, I've seen this story before, and I don't like where it's going.
You
knowing what the ghee is potentially used for. So the one thing we didn't plan for here is this Kuiper mock occurred before the Tyreek Hill trade.
Yes.
So pick number 29, he did make a pick for the Miami Dolphins, gave them Nakobe Dean, the linebacker from Georgia. Now that's the Chiefs pick. So you and I get to replace the Chiefs pick here. So they pick now 29 and 30. At 30, they go George Karlaftis, the edge defender from Purdue, a guy that we have as a borderline. You know, I think we have him 10 on our draft board. So we like the value there. It fits a need. Get that player on the defensive end to eventually replace Frank Clark and add more firepower up front. Any thoughts on where the Chiefs could go here at 29? I've got some thoughts.
Give me a receiver. Give me one. Give me one.
Is this Sky Moore?
George Pickens.
You want Pickens?
Yep.
Do they go receiver or corner here? Are they boxed into a, backed into a hole here or a corner? Backed into a corner is what I'm looking for.
Backed into a corner or a corner?
Yes, a corner. At corner or at receiver. No, at receiver, though. They've got Marcos Valdez-Scantling. You've got Juju Smith-Schuster. there were, I forget whose report it was, that the Chiefs are trying to like reshape their offense and all that stuff and implying that they're trying to get big. I don't know if that's the best way to go. I mean, the mid 2000s Jaguars, post Brunell, the mid 2000s Jaguars had a lot of big receivers. Matt Jones, 6'6". Reggie Williams, 6'4". Ernest Wilford, 6'4". Then they, Mercedes Lewis, a tight end, 6'6". They had an identity. Big, slow receivers. Even though Matt Jones ran 4.37.
It's not a great identity.
Big, slow receivers was their identity. And physicality. John Henderson and Marcus Stroud. I don't know if big and physical is the way to go for the explosive Chiefs offense.
I don't love that as an identity. I mean, look.
But Pickens would kind of fit that bill.
My point is simply, you need to come out of this with a receiver of one of these two first-round picks. And I've seen their second one. So they need
you see Karlaftis, yeah. So you know it's an edge. Because I was thinking initially, you know, when Tyreek Hill was still on the roster, if they had, when they were picking at 30, I'm thinking corner or edge, right? Okay, or Elam, the corner from Florida, I think would be great. But they're going Karlaftis. Sky Moore might be a better receiver here. And even Mel, we thought we were higher on Sky Moore. He thinks, you know, he almost went Sky Moore there for the Dolphins before they traded for Tyreek Hill.
Yeah, I wouldn't hate Sky Moore. I think I like, maybe I'm projecting a little bit, but I like the potential of Pickens as a number one option more than I like that for Sky.
That's
Moore.
Fair. We gave Pickens, we put him in the back end of our first last year, last week, right? As well?
Possibly.
I think we put him in there somewhere. So George Pickens, we're giving him to the Chiefs. So now you got Pickens, Marquez Valdes-Scantling, and Juju Smith-Schuster, and Travis Kelce.
Yeah, which is the important part.
It's a little bit better rounded than it was last year, but you're losing the trump card. But obviously, you know, that could work for the Chiefs. I do love Pickens' potential as well. So in this world, we're giving a Pickens, and they got Karlaftis at 30. That puts the Bengals up at 31. By the way, do you like that overall for the Chiefs? They're going to be able to, you know, rebuild this thing, get back into the exciting mix of the AFC West? I mean, they're still the favorites.
I was going to say,
they're still the favorites.
They didn't leave the mix of the AFC West, but I think this helps mitigate the loss of Tyreek Hill.
And they lost Daniel Sorensen as well.
Well, that's an upgrade.
31, the Cincinnati Bengals. This was a surprise, too. Travis Jones, the big nose tackle out of Connecticut. UConn, even.
UConn.
I'm always amazed. UConn was such a disaster at football, but you have, like, you know, a couple good football players on the team.
Yeah.
They're just so bad at football as a team.
You can make a reasonable argument that Travis Jones has a better profile than Jordan Davis.
You could.
Better at the thing that Jordan Davis is supposed to be good at, against the run. Now,
against lower competition.
Yes, which is significant. But to be fair, there is a marked difference between the level of guys you're going up against at UConn and the level of guys you're going up against at Jordan.
Here's the difference, though. When Travis Jones wins as a pass rusher, it's kind of like the slow, like he'll kind of push the pocket a little bit. He's more wins with quicks.
Right.
Whereas Jordan Davis has the potential to just deposit a guard into a quarterback's
That's what
face.
I'm saying. Like, you can make a case that Travis Jones is a better player right now, but the whole point of Jordan Davis at this stage is potential and what he can become. I'm always scared about drafting a guy based on that, essentially, purely, right? Is what we're drafting here is this potential that he's a much better player than he actually is right now. You're like, well, sure, in theory, that's what everybody's doing, right? Because you're drafting a guy, you're not drafting the college player, you're drafting the guy you think he'll become at the NFL level. But when there's such a gap between the two, that's scary.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, look, we have Jones as a second rounder because that's probably where you want that skill set anyway.
Yes.
Whereas we would also have Davis maybe as like a later first. And maybe even into the second as well, because, again, skill set wise, that's probably where you want him. But Travis Jones, not a bad spot. You lose Larry Ogunjobi up front.
My bigger question is like, so Mel literally, quote unquote, I see Jones as a replacement for Larry Ogunjobi, who had a great 2021 season. Why? He isn't. I mean, he's a replacement for DJ Reader, who's still there.
Yeah, they're more complex. I mean, that's the thing about Jones, too. He does have more. He's got a nose tackle body with maybe more three tech type of skills, but not a guy that you want to go out of your way to put at three tech.
Which is exactly the description of DJ Reader. DJ Reader's got that quickness, penetrates into the backfield, called disrupts. but is like a nose tackle. So I don't really
Ogan Joby also wasn't all that good in 2021, but
well, that's
the NFL kind of seems to disagree with
point.
Us.
But I just don't – that doesn't make sense to me as a fit at all.
So the Bengals – here's the thing. Here's my takeaway. The Bengals are no longer slotted in to draft a first-round offensive lineman.
Yeah.
They have put themselves into position to draft a defensive tackle, to draft a corner, draft whatever. So I think corner would be a good spot here for the Bengals to add depth there. So you're not just relying on Eli Apple.
Or, yeah, corner is, I think, a good spot. Or they're in a great position of being able to just take value. Like, N'Kobe Dean hasn't gone off the board yet.
Yeah.
If they were – N'Kobe Dean was the guy that Mel gave to Miami before – back when they had a pick. Like, N'Kobe Dean's – a lot of NFL people, if you listen to the sort of rumors or the anonymous scout world that exists right now – the NFL seems to be, at least a chunk of the NFL seems to be very low on N'Kobe Dean. And I can't quite work out why.
Like, size?
Yeah, but like in today's NFL, who cares?
But it's like a length. It's more of like a length thing. Because if you're going to bring up Darius Leonard playing at 215, he's got crazy length and compresses zones and takes on blockers and
right,
all that stuff.
But the Dean, flip side to that is N'Kobe Dean has insane speed and range.
No, but so I'm explaining why. Dean's also playing behind one of the best non-Alabama defensive fronts in like college football history.
Yes.
Right? Maybe one of the best in history. And, you know, that's a factor. Like, how much does that affect his production?
Yes. So the only concern should be, is he big enough to take on offensive line blocks when his defensive line isn't a group of first-round players that are all freak
athletes? He's going to be playing behind a worse defensive line in the NFL.
Genuinely. But to be honest, that's diminished a lot in terms of what that role is. You go back 15 years, and it's like if you can't take on an offensive lineman block as a linebacker, you're screwed. You can't play at this level. Like the idea that we have to try and – it was one position, the linebacker core, the will, where everybody – like the rest of the front seven, essentially, your job is to take on blocks so that that one guy can run free to the football. That's different now. Like offensive – most teams are only playing two linebackers most of the time anyway. They're not taking on offensive line blocks as much as they used to. It's not this like physical power attrition game that it was 15 years ago. And yeah, you're going to have to navigate those blocks, but it's not like you need to be Bart Scott in there where you're just launching yourself at a guard and stoning him at the line. So yeah, N'Kobe Dean's going to have to deal with some stuff that he didn't, but like Fred Warner is arguably the best linebacker in the game right now. That dude never had to take on a block in his life in college because he played that overhang linebacker
position.
Basically
played in the slot.
Right. The dude never met an offensive lineman throughout his entire college career. So, he drafted, in the third round or whatever it was? So, but my point simply being, I don't think you can look at that and say, that is why N'Kobe Dean shouldn't be a first rounder when you look at the stuff that he does well.
I mean, Jamin Davis wasn't great at it, had length though. Patrick Queen wasn't great at it. They all went in the first round.
Yes, exactly.
Here's an interesting one. Bernard Raimann, the offensive tackle from Central Michigan, still on the board. If you're the Bengals, you just brought in Lyle Collins. Would you kick Collins in? Would you get Raimann to play right tackle, have Collins play guard, say left guard, Ted Karras at center, Alex Kappa at right guard? Now four-fifths of your offensive line has changed. Or do you have to keep Collins at tackle? Maybe that was part of their agreement there too. But
or you could bring in...
That'd be an interesting value pick.
You could also potentially kick in Jonah Williams to guard, solve the left guard.
Jonah Williams he's a better tackle. He's a tackle, though.
Sure, but there's no reason he can't play guard.
Just saying, if you're talking about value picks, and I'm saying, they did enough with the offensive line, maybe there's one more piece here, just to be safe. And now you've got a few free agents and a developmental prospect or a guy that's going to be there a little bit cheaper in the coming years as well. Bengals have some flexibility.
Yeah, and Raimann's also a guy where, I mean, maybe he's the rare first-round pick that doesn't start. You know?
True.
Maybe Raimann is your Jonah Williams insurance.
Yeah, and Raimann's, he's young at the position. They will have to pay Jonah Williams pretty soon.
That's what I'm saying.
So yeah.
Maybe Raimann becomes your capacity to not have to give the giant contract to Jonah Williams.
But now, if I'm just so I'm not being hypocritical here, I thought that the Chiefs overinvested money monetarily and from a draft pick standpoint. If you're the Bengals, if everything gets invested in the offensive line, then you're playing whack-a-mole. Don't want to be playing whack-a-mole with the roster here, Sam. I'm anti-whack-a-mole.
I just don't see that as a problem.
No one's ever used that. Like, I did invent that, right?
Whack-a-mole?
Yeah.
Probably.
Whack-a-mole with the roster.
Yeah. Maybe that's your one metaphor.
Hey, get a metaphor.
You could get back to zero now.
Yeah. If you spend all your time on one position.
That's your one successful metaphor ever.
Whack-a-mole.
Yeah.
The rest of the roster.
Well done.
Started with the Falcons. That's where the Falcons triggered this in me a couple years ago.
They triggered
when they spent their two first-rounders on the offensive line and their whole rest of the roster fell apart.
I think your premise for that is always off. Like, the problem is not Atlanta investing those two picks at the top of the draft on offensive linemen was not the issue. The problem was the moves that were made three steps further that caused them to be in that position. Like, the whack-a-mole issue had already begun. This was just the first swing of the hammer. It was like, bam, offensive line. Uh-oh. Corner. Uh-oh. But the thing that caused the whack-a-mole had already happened by that point.
Yeah, whatever. All right, 32. Detroit Lions. We're over 2 hours, by the way.
Of course.
Didn't even feel that way.
You would always say that.
Didn't feel. Just, it's a great conversation. The people are loving it. I'm sure they're loving it.
Okay.
They'll let us know if they're not. Mel's going with my strategy with the Lions, just a different quarterback. Pick a quarterback at 32. Get that fifth-year option. They're going Matt Corral out of Ole Miss here at 32.
Yeah.
Corral's kind of been forgotten, I think, in this whole process.
Yeah. Kenny Pickett is the one that I just don't like as a prospect in terms of, like, if I have to draft the guy in the first round and if I'm chasing upside and, like, his... The sort of selling point on Kenny Pickett appears to be, hey, he's the most NFL ready. Like, I don't think he is. At which point, if your selling point is wrong, like, I don't like any of the rest of the stuff, so you're just bad. So I can see a great case for Malik Willis because of the upside, right? I can see a similar case for Sam Howell for upside. I can also see a case for Matt Corral. Those are the guys. I'm fine with spending a low first-round pick on one of those guys because I can see, like, a development upside and an arc. I don't really see one of those for Kenny Pickett.
Yeah, I generally don't like the pre-draft narratives of... I mean, it's just like path of least resistance, right? So in 2012, Ryan Tannehill was coming out, and he played under Mike Sherman at Texas A&M.
Mm-hmm.
And so many people connected the dots like, oh, Mike Sherman's he's the offensive coordinator for the Dolphins now. Ryan Tannehill knows the offense. Got to draft him. And, of course, they ended up drafting him. But, like, it's not that hard to learn an offense. If your selling point is you know the offense before training camp so that you can maybe be like a couple weeks ahead, that's not a good reason to draft. If you're just drafting Kenny Pickett because he's going to hit the ground running faster than some other people, it's not a good reason. That shouldn't be the selling point. It should be on top of everything else. The Tannehill one just stuck out because a lot of times it's like, oh, you know, no, the coach knows the quarterback and, you know, you don't have to learn the offense. Great. It's like, great. Learning an offense has not been found to be this like insurmountable task for NFL players. They'll eventually learn the offense if they know how to learn offenses.
Sure.
So, anyway, Matt Corral, I like the strategy, as I've said before. Pick a quarterback at 32, doesn't keep you out of the mix next year, and just use those extra draft picks to take some swings at quarterback. Corral's one of those guys, as I've mentioned. He's not the biggest, doesn't have the best arm, but he's pretty solid all across the board here.
Yeah. There's a lot to like about his game. I think he's got a pretty quick release. He's got, I think, a decent arm. He's got decent athleticism. The big issue with him is that offense that he ran has like no relevance to an NFL offense, to any NFL offense.
It's Baylor type of stuff.
They ran RPOs on 40% of their offensive plays. Do you know what the NFL average is?
Like 8%.
10. Yeah.
Yeah.
So 10%. And by the way, there's like teams that don't run any. So,
right.
You know, the Patriots ran like 15 RPOs all last season. So there are teams that basically don't run any RPOs, and you're talking about a guy who 40%, like every other throw was an RPO, or every other play was an RPO of some description. So, and what do RPOs do? They essentially limit you to like a one-read thing. So you're taking a guy that has to look up, read a defense once, and it's an either-or option. Yeah. And you're putting that guy in an offense where now he has to work through progressions. And like one read of a defense is going to tell him which part of the combination to read. And then you have to read that combination. And if that's gone to hell, you need to go somewhere completely differently. It's not that you can't do it. It's just we're now in the territory of
This is a complete unknown.
It is, just so people understand the difference too, like it is an RPO, it is a called running play, but it really is, it's an option, right? I mean, it really is an option play. The other option, the second option, is a slant, right? Or, you know, a curl or whatever, a hitch. It's a pass, but it's like read one player and then either hand it off or throw it, which is completely different from general quarterback plays. Dropping back, reading a side of the field, reading a route concept, reading multiple defenders. Even if it's reading one defender, you're just reading them in coverage.
Yes.
The snap, not before. So you have to have pre-snap recognition, post-snap recognition. It is a completely different world.
They used to be called package plays. And the idea was you package some kind of pass concept into a running play. So, and you used to see, like, Brett Favre used to do this basically off the cuff, where he'd have these running plays, and then he would, like, look up and, like, dude, that guy's playing 7 yards off. Let's just have my receiver, let's have Donald River run a slant here, and I'll just hit the slant. Doesn't matter if the offensive line's run blocking. It's an immediate, quick pass, right? Otherwise, Driver's just, like, running that guy off anyway. It's not, who cares? So you package that, and then they were like, well, that's actually a pretty good idea. Let's package that in to the run plays. So instead of having our wide receivers waste time and either just occupy the DB or actually block him, let's have him run a pass pattern. And then we can use that if we need to. So then this world of RPOs kind of built up and developed and got more complicated and all this kind of stuff. But generally the idea is this quarterback is taking a look up pre-snap a lot of the time and being like, hey, look, I've got this one thing here. And if that guy moves in this direction, I have an easy pass open. So that's the level that that's the level that 40% of what Matt Corral is doing in his offense is.
Yes.
And that's going to need to go from that to NFL offense.
And that's why I think the Lions are a good spot for him.
Yeah.
Because he could, you know, sit for a year behind Jared Goff and learn an NFL offense.
But by the way, this is where interviews and stuff become super important relative to just, hey, is his tape good or not? Because that, it's not that he can't do that. For all I know, the dude is like a football savant and this is nothing to him, right? And when you get him in there for a 15-minute interview and put him up on the whiteboard, like he's out, you know, he's out play diagramming the coach, you know, and is no problem whatsoever. And in 15 minutes, you might come away and say, oh, this dude is a top 10 pick because I have no concerns whatsoever about his capacity to come in and execute an NFL offense right now. Like, he's amazing. Or you might get him up on the whiteboard, and if you get beyond an RPO, the dude's like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Right. So
and we're not privy to that
information. And by the way, there's also the third world of the Kirk Cousins, right? Where that dude is like, I've rarely heard anybody smarter than Kirk Cousins talk about plays, right? When you hear him run through his mental process on a play and what he's thinking about and the fact that he's reading something so that like two steps further on in the dominoes, this opens up and that's what he's hitting. Like the difference between Kirk Cousins sort of theoretically and on the whiteboard and Kirk Cousins, like when the bullets start to fly, is big. Yeah. So there's also that world of like, hey, he might theoretically know all this stuff, but when can he do it once that's what the offense is? So all of these are unknowns that has to affect where you rate him.
Yeah, sometimes you're too dependent on the scheme. That's where Kirk could be sometimes. Anyway, that's Mel's mock plus the Chiefs pick there. Like going through the mock drafts on Monday. We've got some other ideas. I think we're going to try to do something mock draft related every Monday from now until the draft. We'll do a little head-to-head, and I really want to have a live one with the fans. We're going to figure out the logistics on this. We'll hype it up because we need a lot of people in the YouTube chat here. We need a lot of people in the chat. We'll vote for picks. You know, maybe only fans can only vote for their team. Got to be honor system here. No, we'll have some fun with that where we can have more of an interactive deal. Sound good?
Yep.
Don't forget, you get 25% off all your PFF products and subscriptions. They're subscriptions. They're not products. I never said that.
Aren't they both?
No, products internally. And then the people said, no, you tell the people that they're subscriptions.
The people said that? Who told you that?
Those are the rules.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Who's
subscriptions?
Who gave you those instructions?
Austin.
Huh.
Yeah. Don't call them products. Call them subscriptions. We call them products. That's like internal jargon. You don't want people buying products. You want them subscribing.
You don't want people buying products.
No. Subscribing. Subscribe for 25% off.
Also, contact us in all those ways below.
Yeah. But use the promo code NFLPOD was what I was trying to get out to. NFLPOD, 25% off.
For the listeners, NFLPodcast@pff.com is the email. at PFF NFL Pod is the Twitter account, and then at PFF NFL Podcast is our TikTok. So if you're listening and not, you know, not able to view the lovely graphic that Tyler's thrown down there, those are the ways. I've just told you. I've read them out.
What's this mic on the... Listen, we're in off-season mode. We had somebody complaining that the audio version's not out yet. I mean, now you're listening to it.
It's not out yet?
Well, because we start at 9 o'clock here in the off-season. I think Mike's still looking for the old 7 a.m. in-season.
Oh, okay.
And that's what we did last
week.
Well,
it's also, last week we threw people off because we had to run random early.
9 a.m. So that's the thing. If you're on YouTube, 9 a.m. on Monday, 1 p.m. on Wednesday, 10:30 on Thursday.
Yes.
Join us live.
If you're on audio, sometime after that.
All right. Thanks to everybody for tuning in. We'll see you again on Wednesday.